You can never get tired of hearing that. Adam Hogue, I know you've been on overdrive today, yesterday, last night, all week long. Actually, all month long, considering how great the Bears are doing. But you're a Bears expert, and we wanted to touch base with you and just talk about the Bears and how great they're doing.
Yeah, it's been quite a different season for me, Andrea. I'm used to covering a team. We're talking about draft picks by now.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Now we're talking about the playoffs, and you got to keep January open. It's kind of cool. They're playing outstanding football right now.
Did you think they were going to win last night?
I did, actually. The game went a little different than I thought. I had them winning 28-24.
Okay.
So I thought there'd be more points scored. So I was a little surprised that Mitch Trubisky struggled as much as he did. And then I guess I can't be completely surprised by the dominating performance by the Bears defense because they've been so good all season long. But that is such a good Rams offense that I never would have thought that they would hold them to only 6 points, which was really an incredible feat by that. Last night was really, if you want to put it in perspective, one of those games that I think we're going to be talking about for a really, really long time. You know, 5 years from now, it's being like, remember that time that Bears defense shut down the Rams
and
a great December night game?
And, yeah.
It was fun.
Oh, I bet it was. And I bet it was fun to be there and to watch it all play out. I know a lot of people are, Mitchell Trubisky, of course, is a huge part of all of this. Coaching, of course, by John Nagy. Is it just everything that's kind of coming together? Is it almost like the perfect storm of goodness?
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, there's actually plenty of work that could still be done. I mean, you if you want to be a serious Super Bowl contender, I think the quarterback needs to play better. And that's, quite frankly, Matt Nagy's number one job right now, is to develop the quarterback. But, I mean, there's no question. Anybody who's watching this offense right now compared to where it was a year ago, I mean, look at the touchdown last night. The touchdown was a play that had four defensive linemen on the field on offense, and the throw went to an offensive lineman.
Right.
Okay, there were no wide receivers on the field, no running backs, no tight ends. I mean, first of all, that's so far removed than like any rational offense there is. But compared to what the Bears were running last year under John Fox and Dow Loggins, which was just the most basic, don't turn the ball over, let's be as conservative as possible, Matt Nagy's the complete opposite. And
yeah,
it's really added to the entertainment level.
Boy, and the next step, of course, securing a playoff spot, just 3 games to go. I didn't realize, well, I mean, I know you did, but first postseason appearance since 2010.
Yeah, it's been a long time. In fact, it's been so long that I've covered the team for 8 years, and I haven't covered a Bears playoff game. So,
really, Adam?
I mean, that's how long it's been since they've been
Holy
in the playoffs.
Cow.
So, yeah, the Vikings are playing the Seahawks right now on Monday Night Football, and if the Vikings lose tonight, then all the Bears have to do is beat the Packers on Sunday to win the NFC North, a little extra incentive to do it against your biggest rival, too. And the Bears would have the NFC North wrapped up by Sunday, which is incredible.
What was the deal with the dance music and the strobe lights going?
Yeah,
I mean, you got to have a little fun with it. I'm glad they did.
Well, are you referring to that air raid siren?
Yeah, yeah.
That was going off throughout the game. It kind of created, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but there were a lot of mixed opinions to that. I think some people were annoyed by it, which is understandable. They played it a ton. It didn't really bother me. Then there was others that were just like, you know, do you really need to pipe in artificial crowd noise? Isn't the crowd noise enough?
Oh, right.
Because it's the first time they've done that. I've never heard them putting an air raid siren out like that before.
No, I hadn't heard that either. I don't want to say it was annoying. It was noticeable. It was definitely noticeable.
And I think it was definitely noticeable for the Rams.
Yeah. Which, I think so, too.
You know,
which, hey, you know what? That's okay.
Somewhere in the organization, and maybe it's Matt Nagy, who just came from the Chiefs. They have a great atmosphere at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City every single week. I've been there, and it was one of the louder stadiums I've covered a game in. So I don't know if he's behind this. Maybe that's a question that can come up this week, just where that idea came from. Here's what I know. Whether it was annoying or necessary, it was effective.
Absolutely,
the Rams
yeah.
were rattled the entire game. They were having communication issues. They weren't on top of the snaps. at times. They had procedural issues on offense, and you know, it just felt like the Bears were in control the entire game.
The best celebration, according to WGN TV, and probably a lot of people who on Twitter today would say for the locker room, where that new tradition continued, where they're dancing around, and then there's the after the dance party, there's the speech, and then you know the what. That's kind of becoming, well, internet fodder as well, but it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, so they got the disco ball and the lights. Maybe that's what you're referring
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, the dance
before.
Party. Yep.
That's something that Matt Nagy has really hyped up. You know what I love about Matt Nagy is he's all about having fun. Now, it's easier to do that when you're winning, obviously.
Right.
But he's been trying to keep these guys loose from the start of the season, even after they lost to the Packers in week one after blowing a 20-0 lead, which, I mean, that could have been really the downfall if you really think about it. A loss like that, he kept the team loose. He's been stressing that all season. These videos that come out after the games of them dancing, Club Dub for W, getting the W. They call
Club Dub.
and they're fun to watch. And he's involved in it. I know the players like it. And there's just a good chemistry with this group right now. And that can be a dangerous thing come the playoffs. That's the type of things that Super Bowl contenders have, is a great bond in the locker room, and this team definitely has it. It's certainly the best bond I've seen since I started covering the team.
And you know, what a stand-up guy too, Mitchell Trubisky. Even after the win, you know, the quote today from ESPN, he said, I'm pretty disappointed in myself the way that I played. It's hard to be down though when you get such a big win. You have to put your own selfish thoughts about how you played aside. I mean, that's a stand-up guy.
Yeah, you could tell he was, not completely thrilled after the game with his own performance. And that's a tough spot because, he's in the spotlight more than anybody. And this was a nationally televised game. He's received a ton of criticism this year, a lot of it unfair, some of it fair.
Mm-hmm.
And he just played his worst game of the year, quite frankly. And so in the midst of this giant win for the organization, a historical win when you bring up that they haven't been in the playoffs since 2010, here's the starting quarterback, and there's such a spotlight on him to play well, and he actually struggled. So I appreciated what he said after the game.
Yeah.
I thought it was raw and real. Like, hey, yeah, my team won this huge game, but I'm still kind of upset at myself, and I got to make sure I put that aside and not be selfish about that. But he wants to play a lot better.
Yeah, he does. And he said he'll get everything corrected. What's the number one thing that he does have to correct, Adam, and has to get fixed before?
Well, the thing that concerned me last night was I thought a lot of the mistakes that he made were due to his mechanics and his kind of poor footwork, which was really more of an issue like the first three games of the season. You know, he's had some struggles here and there and some bad throws here and there, but really he had ironed out a lot of those mechanical issues that were leading to overthrows. And really what I like to refer to is the game just slowing down for a quarterback. That's when quarterbacks get in a rhythm and they start playing well. And early in the season, things were going really fast for him. He didn't look comfortable in the new offense that Matt Nagy's running, and they're throwing a lot at him. So I think because he was out for a couple of weeks, that contributed to all that kind of coming back yesterday. And I think that's what Bears fans have to hope is the case. But we've seen him play a lot better, and I think that getting another week of practice and coming back against the Packers Sunday, things will start to slow down again. And it better, because they need him to play a lot better in the playoffs.
Absolutely. Adam, can you hold on just for a sec? I want to talk to you about the Packers coming up, too.
No problem.
Okay, it's Adam Hoge, our Bears guru. Take care of a little bit of business and get you a news update. And back with Adam after this on 720 WGN. They just beat the best team in the league, arguably, didn't they, Adam Hoge?
They did. The Rams and Saints, they're probably the two best teams, and I mean, the Chiefs are up there too, but definitely one of the best.
No easy task. They're tied for the fifth best in the NFL. Again, they just beat the Rams. They've won six of their last seven games, but as we say, they got to face the Packers now coming up. That's going to be daunting. It always is.
It always is, and the Packers, believe it or not, still have a, albeit unlikely, path to the playoffs. They've not been eliminated yet, and they need a lot of help, but it starts with what they can control, and that's coming to Chicago this weekend and beating the Bears, a team they already beat this year, a team that they've owned. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has owned the Chicago Bears.
Yeah,
now, I think, based on what we've seen this entire season, and honestly, even though the Packers won that week one game, I thought going into it and I thought coming out of it that really the Bears were in better shape going forward for the rest of the year. It was really just Aaron Rodgers kind of pulling off this miraculous comeback on one leg. And unfortunately, Kyle Fuller, who's having an outstanding season, but he dropped a key interception late in that game that would have sealed the victory for the Bears. So it was a missed opportunity, as all four of the Bears' losses this season have been. But that's against your rival, a team that the Bears just can't beat the Packers. It's the reality of the situation. So it won't quite get the same attention that this game against the Rams did, but, I mean, it's huge for the Bears to prove that they can not only beat the Packers, but that they're the team that now owns the NFC North, mm-hmm. as the Packers are now looking for a new head coach.
Do you think this is the best chance they've had to beat the Packers in a long time?
Well,
at least maybe within a year or 2 years.
I would say definitely this is, I have to go back and look at some of like the Vegas spreads, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember last year they were supposed to beat the Packers because the Packers came here without Aaron Rodgers. Brett Hundley was their backup quarterback, and they were kind of reeling at the time, and they didn't make the playoffs last year either, and the Bears were favored and should have won that game, and they just played terrible. That was the game that John Fox really lost his job, in my opinion, because they just came out so flat and didn't play that well and lost such a bad loss. When you know, the McCaskey family cares so much about beating the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't do it, it's a problem. And that's where, you know, I think that week one loss to the Packers hurt so much. But Matt Nagy and the Bears really have an opportunity on Sunday to make a statement against their rival.
Joe Philbin even said today, we know we're going to have to play an awfully good football game on Sunday at noon in Chicago. We'll have to play as well as we've played for sure, if not better. So I think it sounds at least that they know that too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm looking forward to getting in the locker room the rest of this week, talking to some of the Bears players now that it's Packers week again, to really go back and talk about that week one loss and how much of an impact that's really had on this entire season. Because, you know, blowing a lead like that, the season could have gone two ways. I mean, they could have come out completely flat the next week because they missed such a big opportunity against their big rival. And instead, they rallied and they won three straight games after that and really got the season off to the right start. And so I think they're going to be highly, highly motivated to not only beat the Packers, but to make a statement. And it wouldn't shock me at all if the Bears come out and, you know, win pretty handily against Green Bay on Sunday, because they really should. They're a better team, but I guess they still have Aaron Rodgers over there, and that's always the equalizer in this series.
Boo. No. What are you looking to see from this game? Obviously, Mitchell Trubisky turning out a better performance. Is there anything else that you're really going to be watching for, Adam?
You got to have a four-quarter performance from your defense. I hate criticizing this defense because it's so good.
Yeah.
But the one bugaboo is that they've struggled in the fourth quarter, and that included the loss to Green Bay earlier in the year when they blew the lead. And tackling has been an issue sometimes. Now, that was my big question last night, even going into the fourth quarter, because the Bears had a two-possession lead. But could they hold on, because they hadn't really been playing well for four quarters, a complete performance? Now, they did that last night. I mean, they finished the game off, and they played tremendous. Can they do it again? Because you can't give Aaron Rodgers any openings, or he's going to take advantage of that. And then, yes, Mitchell Trubisky, they need him to play a lot better. Does he bounce back and play better against Green Bay? It's a huge question on Sunday.
All right. I said that the Packer fans in the room, Adam, could each ask you a question. I think Don Kleppen is chomping at the bit here. He was wearing his Aaron Rodgers jersey a few weeks ago. So
yeah, I can hardly keep
it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Andrea. Hey, Adam.
Might as well keep getting the use out of that jersey while you still can.
That's right.
I know.
Someday, Adam.
I can't. But anyway, my question would just simply be that, like, you know, since the Bears are playing for domination and the Packers are kind of searching for their next head coach, you know, do you think that even with Rodgers as he is, like the Packers offense, do you think that they have any kind of a shot against the Bears defense the way they played against the Rams yesterday?
I mean, they do, because they've already shown it this year that they can score against this Bears defense. But, you know, at some point this week, I'll go back and rewatch that tape from week one. But just off the top of my head, I mean, that really, as much as you, I don't want to discredit what Aaron did in that game, because it was incredible. I mean, he's on one leg and he's making amazing throws like he usually does, and he's just so good. He has a knack for finding the open guy. But a lot of it was still missed tackles. I mean, guys should have been down on the ground. Kyle Fuller drops an easy gift-wrapped interception, which was not a good throw from Aaron Rodgers. And he catches that ball, and the Bears are 1-0, and the Packers are 0-1. And it just didn't. So it felt like it really, as great as Aaron played in that game, it felt like the Bears lost it to me rather than the Packers went out there and won it, because it was really just kind of a one-man performance. And before that turnaround, it was complete and utter domination by the Bears.
100%.
And I think that even though Green Bay came back and won, the three quarters before the comeback were a better representation of how these seasons have gone. I mean, if you would agree with that. I mean, obviously the Packers are struggling, and the Bears turned out to be a really good team. So I just feel like in this game at Soldier Field on Sunday, I would be surprised if we didn't see more of that, where the Bears are clearly the better team and take advantage of that. But it is a rivalry game, and until you actually, the clock hits zero and the Bears have beaten Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, then you really can't feel all that confident if you're the Bears.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. Yeah, all right, Michael Heidemann, Packer fan extraordinaire.
Well, growing up with the Packers for many, many years, I've gotten much remorse from being a fan. I remember my hat was taken one time. But I want to know, like, how much does this rivalry play into the thought process? Like, when you're on the field with a team that you know that the fans are kind of chomping at the bit to see you beat. Because even in their 2006 season, where they went to the Super Bowl, I think, they had lost to the Packers. So obviously this is a fabled rivalry. And they beat them earlier this year. Is there a certain oomph when it comes to these games?
Yeah, I think so. And I felt it week one. I mean, there was definitely an emphasis on beating the Packers and going up the Lambeau. And I think that's why the loss hurt so much, because they really executed what was a pretty surprising performance. Remember, Green Bay was a big favorite in that game. I want to say 6.5 points going into that game. And the Bears were just dominating. Mm-hmm. And the entire country was watching, and social media was going crazy, and everyone was like, oh my God, this Bears offense, Matt Nagy, it's incredible what they're doing. And then it was just like, bam, the whole thing changed, and it turned out to be a terrible loss. Honestly, one of the worst losses they've had in a while, and there's been a ton of them as of late, you know, before this season. But the juice was still there in that rivalry, in that game, and it's still going to be there this week. So, especially because, you know, Green Bay still has a lot to play for. They're not eliminated from the playoffs yet, and they can make a statement against their rival and continue to show that, yeah, the Bears are better, but we still own them. And then on the flip side, the Bears have a huge statement to make that, no, the tables have turned. You know, you guys are now the team that's farther down in the standings in the NFC North. You need to go find a new head coach. And you know, now the Bears are at the top. But until they get that victory on Sunday, they can't really say that. So I think both teams will be highly motivated, and it'll be another fun chapter in this Bears-Packers rivalry.
Okay, you greedy Packer fan, monopolizing Adam's team. Go ahead, Don.
Sorry, just one last thing, Adam. my question was that, you know, in week one, it was a Sunday night game that the Bears and Packers played each other, and the last 2 weeks, the NFL flexed two games, you know, changing the Sunday night schedule. I keep personally forgetting that this is a noon game between the Bears and Packers. Like, was there a reason why they couldn't flex this one?
Well, I think it was just because the Packers have been struggling so much. Honestly, they could have been eliminated from the playoff contention at this point.
And that's true.
You know what? I haven't gotten that far ahead to look at the schedule this weekend, but I'm pretty sure there's both in the late afternoon window and at night, there's two really good games.
Gotcha.
So it just didn't really make sense. As much as the Bears-Packers rivalry still is a big deal, even nationally, it didn't really make sense to flex this game into the late window. And yeah, let me see real quick, because I have this up now. Yeah, you got the Eagles going to the Rams on Sunday night. So the Carson Wentz, Jared Goff thing still going on. And so that's a big one. So they weren't going to go to Sunday night on back-to-back weeks. And then the late afternoon game, you got the Patriots playing the Steelers. So they weren't going to move that one either.
For sure. All right, that makes sense.
Predictions. What do you think, Adam?
Oh, I mean, we're still way too early in the week for me to narrow down a score.
All right, no score. We'll just do teams first. We'll do scores later in the week.
Bears win, and I think they win big, because I think that they're going to want to, you know, make a big statement after what happened in week one.
I'm saying Bears. Kleppen?
I'm going to say Packers, just because
someone has to.
It'll make me feel better.
All right, yeah. Michael?
Packers are a fourth quarter team. I think they can come through this week.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm saying, man. I'll even go out. I'll go out on a limb and give you a score, Adam, because I don't know if I'll talk to you before then, but 41-3, Bears.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. And here's another thing you have to help me fix. So I'm looking online. I'm doing all this research on the Green Bay Packers now. So I'm at Packers Wires. It's off of USAtoday.com. And you know how they have these little things that say, we'd like to notify you of the latest whatever website you're on, and you either say no thanks or you allow. There's a huge piece of cheese. There's like a big wedge that just keeps popping up on my screen.
Oh, yeah.
So I know what's going to happen. I'm going to go to Facebook and there's going to be Packers gear. I'm going to go to, you know, Twitter and they're going to be advertising Packers socks.
You're tracked as a Packer fan.
I'm totally tracked as a Packer fan. I got to fix that. Adam, you got to help me.
I always love with those things when you buy something and then you get all the ads after you've already bought the item.
And you can click it and say, hi, did I already bought it, even if you haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I bought a coat like a couple weeks ago online, and I'm still like on Instagram, Facebook, wherever I am. I'm just getting bombarded with ads for coats, and I'm like, I already got one. I'm good.
I know, I hate that. Or if you're just looking something up, like maybe thinking of buying it, it appears everywhere. It's like right in the middle of your Instagram feed.
Now, that's effective advertising.
Yeah, stop watching us.
You to do it. Yeah.
Adam, thank you so much, as always. You are the best, and go Bears.
All right, it'll be a fun week, and I think the Bears will pull it out. But good talking to you guys.
You are the best. That's the great Adam Hoke. Where can we follow you, Adam, real quick? Twitter?
WGNradio.com/Bears.
Very good. That's the best. Adam Hoke. More after this, 720 WGN. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I want to introduce you to three store owners. They are the owners of three pop-up stores that are right downtown here at Block 37, and they are all from Chicago and feature Chicago-themed merchandise. In other words, games that were made in Chicago, inventors from Chicago. Will Byington's going to be here. You know his name. He's one of the best photographers in the city of Chicago. Photographs Wrigley Field, Chicago scenes, and a lot of concert photos. He shot Petty's last concert when he was at Wrigley Field, so you're really going to enjoy these guys. They come in the 8 o'clock hour. They'll be with us. But are you guys? We're all movie buffs, I think, here. They announced the Golden Globe Awards today. I love the Golden Globes. I think I like them better than the Oscars now.
Yeah, those are fun.
They have much better hosts. Just a little bit more edgier, too. It's like an edgier Oscars nowadays.
Yeah, I think because they're all drinking champagne. They're all loopy by the time they get up on the stage. But I like it because it's movies and TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the categories I just absolutely love because they can't just do Best Motion Picture Drama, but they'll do Best Motion Picture, what is it, Animate? Oh, here it is. Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical. And the things they picked, I think, The Martian 1 year to be nominated for Best Comedy or Musical. And Matt Damon won, and he said, I don't know how this can be considered a comedy or musical, but nonetheless, he's happy to be a Golden Globe winner.
Yeah.
So I want to see if you guys have seen any of these. I've seen one movie that's nominated for Best Motion Picture. Usually I've seen all of them by now, but maybe we'll get the screeners for SAG-AFTRA. Okay, A Star is Born.
Definitely saw it. One of the best movies of the year, by far.
Yeah, you did like that. Did you like the acting, the singing?
I like the acting. I like the singing. I love Bradley Cooper. Like, it was so funny because I don't like a lot of dramatic movies, but Bradley Cooper he is at a whole new level when it comes to this. The acting was out of this world, and the songs were so, so good. It was a movie for everybody, and I think that is going to be the runaway hit at this year's Golden Globes, by far.
I think you're absolutely right. If Beale Street Could Talk. Have you seen that one?
No.
No, me neither. Have you seen that, Don?
I think that movie actually comes out in like a week or two.
Oh, yeah, of course they do.
It's not even out yet.
That's right. All the movies. I asked Dean one time. I said, why does that happen? And he said, because the Academy has bad memories.
Yeah.
One of the only movies that didn't happen with was Silence of the Lambs. Do you guys know that?
Wow.
Because that came out February 14th, ironically, Valentine's Day of 1990, and was nominated for all the awards in December and swept the Oscars. So they had to re-release it because by the time the Academy Awards came out, you know, the Academy Awards ceremony was held, it was over a year later.
Yeah, but it does stick in the head. That movie kind of lingers.
It absolutely does. Okay, the other, I'll start with B. Stars Born, well, they'll be Beale Street Could Talk, Black Klansman.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was fun. That's a good Spike Lee movie.
Oh, that sounds like it would be fun.
Yeah, it was.
Black Klansman, really?
Yeah, yeah, it's based off of a true story.
That's a drama. Oh, okay.
Well, no, and it is like there are it's got a comedic bent to it. Like Adam West is in it, and he, you know, it's this,
really,
yeah, this black cop, you know, goes to Colorado and he's a rookie and he's trying to make a name for himself and gets on the phone and calls the leader of the local chapter of the Klan and convinces him over the phone that
to let him be a member.
Yeah, and so Adam West has
and hilarity ensues, right?
Yes, exactly.
Let me guess. Bohemian Rhapsody, that is on my list to see. You saw that, right, Michael?
Yep, I saw that. Really good movie. Kind of a watered-down version of what Queen's Life on the Road really looked like,
yeah.
But it really did a good job of highlighting Freddie Mercury and the other band's perspectives. They didn't go solely into what Freddie was thinking. It was a lot of what Brian May and the other members of the group were going through at that time. So yeah, I can see that why that would be up there. I don't know if that's going to take home any awards, though.
I saw an awesome documentary. I think it was on Netflix. It was called Mercury Rising, all about Freddie Mercury. And,
oh, cool.
And I love the fact that, you know, I mean, I know when he died, I know that was obviously a big part of him and AIDS. But they didn't just, you know, they focused on his early years and growing up. And I didn't realize that all the members of Queen were just these brilliant guys. You know,
yeah.
I think two were going to be scientists and, you know, just what became of them and how huge they were and just why Freddie Mercury never had his teeth fixed. I mean, it was so cool. So I'm dying to see Bohemian Rhapsody. And I have seen Black Panther.
Okay.
Black Panther's on there too, huh?
That's that's one of the top five for it. This is best motion picture drama. I
wow,
like
best
that.
Motion yeah, picture too. For Black Panther.
Yeah, I like Black Panther.
That's pretty. That's a little. I don't know if it's well because Dark Knight won obviously, but like for a superhero movie, still getting nominated for an award is pretty. Still doesn't. Just doesn't, you wouldn't think of it.
Yeah.
But
I think,
that's a good movie.
Yeah, so I got a lot to do. Mm-hmm. Got a lot to do over the holidays here, over the break.
But that's fun homework, though.
We don't get a break.
Right.
We'll have to watch it like in the morning. All right, it's coming up on 7:57 with Don's News, and we will meet the owners of the pop-ups at Block 37, part of the Chicago Design Mart, coming up next on 720 WGN. I have a lot of microphones going on here tonight. I'm so excited to have in studio three people who I met over the weekend. Will, I've known for many, many years. They are all of the owners of the pop-ups at Block 37, part of the Chicago Design Market. So it's Deandra, Joe, Eric, and Will. And I'm going to have all of you introduce yourselves individually and tell us the names of your stores or the stores that you're affiliated with. Okay, Deandra.
My name is Deandra Lammons, and I have a store in Block 37 called Maddie and Lou.
Okay, and what do you sell?
I sell women's clothing. It's a women's boutique, and we sell everything from clothes, accessories, candles, stocking stuffers.
All kinds of good stuff.
All
like
kinds
that.
Of good stuff.
Anything and everything you'd need, because fashion is your passion.
Exactly.
That's right. We're going to get into your story in just a little bit, Deandra. Also, Joe and Eric, we're going to lump you guys together as well. Give us your 411.
Yeah, hey, I'm Eric Arnault. I'm the event and retail director for the Chicago Playtest Society. We are a pop-up board game store at the Design Market. And this is...
I'm Joe Gennaro. I am a game designer, and I worked on one of the games being sold at the pop-up Competition Kitchen.
Our best seller, in fact.
Yeah, and you sold more of Competition Kitchen yesterday than at any time at all, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
I'd like to think we had a little something to do with that, right, for weekend break?
Absolutely, yeah.
You guys were great hosts and hostesses, by the way. Everybody loved you guys on our weekend break. You can see the piece we did at WGNTV.com. Okay, Will, and you're kind of the master planner of all of this.
That's a rumor. Thanks so much for having us, first of all. Again, it's Will Byington, Will Byington Photography, and this year I created, kind of in my little shop, we've got five different Chicago artists selling photography, Chicago images, animal images, drone images from all over the city, as well as even my buddy Mackenzie, who we didn't even mention on the TV, did woodworking. So we have a collection.
Were those the benches that were in the middle?
Yep.
Oh, neat.
So we kind of have a wide collection of photography and art from all over Chicago.
Okay, let's go reverse order now. So let's talk a little bit about, Will, your photographs. What got you into photography? I mean, you can see beautiful shots of the L, of the river, of the lake, of concerts. Tell us a little bit about how you got started.
So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, grew up out in Naperville, and have always just loved Chicago. Started coming downtown in middle school, high school, and just there's so much beauty in Chicago. Every corner you go down, every street you look, every L stop even, there's just a beauty to Chicago. And I think Chicagoans, almost more than any other city, I think we wear Chicago on our sleeve. So many people have the Chicago flag as a tattoo.
Right, right.
That's how much we love our city. And as a photographer, it's just an incredibly beautiful city. As a Cubs fan, a lifelong Cubs fan also, the beauty of Wrigley Field was one of the first things I really kind of photographed and was one of the first photos I sold. I have a great shot from 2003 of a ball on the field in the grass at Wrigley. And in the background's the ivy and the iconic scoreboard. And people start saying, you know, my friend Danny Beck at Tunes was like, I'll put that on the wall at the bar. And I was like, really? You want to buy that photo and hang it at your bar? And that's kind of what got me going.
And how many years ago was that?
That was in 2003.
Okay.
And so for the last 14 years, I've been doing photography for a living. And that's kind of what prompted even doing the pop-up shop at Block 37 is I wanted to kind of, you know, now with Facebook and Instagram and the web, I wanted to kind of bring it into a real space.
Like a brick and mortar, a temporary one.
And there's no way I would want to do that. All my friends give me a hard time because my life is photographing the streets of Chicago, photographing concerts, photographing bands. One of my best clients, I do a bunch of rock and roll cruises, photographing bands on cruises in the Caribbean. And, you know, but being here in Chicago, it's all Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah.
And to be able to bring it into something real where people can walk in the door and all of a sudden see a 3-foot by 4-foot picture of, you know, the iconic river on St. Patrick's Day with the river in green and everything else is black and white.
Yeah.
Is just, it's cool to see people's reactions and see it in a physical real photo. And I believe everyone, as a photographer, nowadays everyone should print their own photos. So we're also offering where you can make your own coasters with your images. So you can come into the store at Block 37 or message me 4 of your favorite photos and walk out with a hard, real drink coaster with a picture on it. And people love that. It's cool to see people. You know, yesterday I did 4 photos of your own.
Yeah, which were great. I love that.
And it was just cool seeing your reaction. You know, it comes hot off the press.
Yeah.
And you're actually holding your photo. And it's just a really cool thing.
It really is. I'm so glad you kind of started this concept. You've been at Block 37 now. This is your 3rd year. And you invited some of your besties to come out and display with you, which is so cool because you guys each have your own store. Okay, Eric and Joe, you guys are part of the Chicago Playtest Society. Eric, tell us what the Playtest Society is.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Playtest Society is kind of a sister company of Cards Against Humanity, which is also a Chicago company. And we have been doing pop-up events around the city that combine dining and tabletop gaming, which are 2 things that are just really excellent at bringing people together and 2 things I love a lot. So I have a background in specialty retail. I come from comic book and board game stores. And so when Tanner at the Chicago Design Museum asked us if we'd like to run a pop-up this holiday season, I was very excited to get back to my retail roots.
It's kind of nice, right? Oh. Actually seeing people interacting and they hand you a credit card.
I like it.
Even though you use the square, you know, even though it's all.
I really do like it. I feel like, you know, for most people, you get about 5 minutes to spend with them in a retail environment. And it's really lovely to get to know people in such kind of micro chunks. You still learn a lot about them. And it's just nothing but pleasant interactions all the way down.
And Joe, you are the creator of their most popular game, at least for yesterday, at least for the weekend, too. Tell us about the game and how you came up with the concept and the idea.
Absolutely.
It's a good old fashioned card game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a party game. And it's for people who like to eat or cook or watch cooking competition shows like MasterChef or Iron Chef or anything with chef in the name, basically. Depending on how you play, it can either be Cutthroat Kitchen or Great British Bake Off, depending on the kind of friends you have. But yeah, the idea came from my good buddy and creative partner, Kevin Reeder. He came up with the idea, and we wanted to work together to create a game about these shows that we like. It's the second game that we've made, and we wanted to find a way to capture that essence of being innovative in the kitchen, trying to make do with whatever you're given. And one of the key elements that we knew we needed in the game was a secret ingredient, just like all of those good shows.
Yeah.
Right before they start cooking, they say, also, you have to put gummy bears in your food somewhere.
That's
yeah.
always the staple, sure.
Exactly, yeah. So
the odd food that they add.
Yeah. So we wanted to create a party game environment where everybody is a head chef at their own station, gathering ingredients of different kinds, and then one person at the table is the judge. They choose the scenario and the secret ingredient, and then they pick the winner. And then the judgeship rotates around the circle. So it does also kind of play like Cards Against Humanity, a game that is great, and everybody probably recognizes.
It's so much fun. I mean, it's actually like you were, well, it wasn't like we were in the kitchen, but, you know, thank you for letting me play with you guys yesterday. That was quite fun. Even though you guys are such gamers, you're like, you cannot play with 2 people. We can't even fake this. We can't stage this.
It's true. I really did ask Deandra to come over and be in our shot so we could at least have the 3
right.
people.
And we're like, no, she gets her own shot. She gets her own shot. So that moves us to the lovely Deandra. Tell us a little bit about Maddie and Luke. Give us your backstory. I love your backstory. I'm not even going to give anything away about you quitting your day job or your grandparents? Oh, I just did. Oh, wait. Oh, wait. No, tell us about you.
Yeah, so I just quit my full-time...
Just lean up a little bit. Get right up in there. There you go.
My full-time day job about 2 months ago at this point. I spoke to Will on the phone maybe about 4 months ago, and he convinced me, like, you know what, DeAndre, I've never met you, but you sound like just the girl that really should do a pop-up. And at that moment, I called my parents, and I said, you know what, I'm quitting.
Good for you.
I haven't looked back, and it's been really exciting. One, to be my own boss. It's been really fun. Like, when I come in, I'm like, hello, boss. I'm here.
Right. So I was asking you yesterday, what's your boss like? Right. Is she tough?
She's tough.
She hard?
Yeah, she's...
Hardcore?
I like her.
Yeah. She's very sweet. But that's cool. And Maddie and Lou's named after her?
Yes. And Maddie and Lou are my grandparents, Matthew and Louise. I was going back and forth with names when I was trying to name the boutique, and I wasn't sure what to name it. And I'm always... Family's everything to me, so not naming it after them would have been felt funny.
Are they super proud? I mean, are they just...
Yes, and it's really cute. So my grandmother, actually, I called her and I said, hey, Grandma, I want to let you know I named my clothing store after you. It's a website. It's an online boutique. And she said, oh, my goodness, can you send me the catalog?
No.
And I said, no, I can't. It's online. It's on a website. So, yeah, that made my heart really happy.
Oh, did she go online and look then?
I'm hoping someone showed it to her. Yeah.
But she, That's so cute. You can show her when you were on TV yesterday.
Exactly. And she did see the clip. Online, so she was showed that yesterday.
Was she tough on you? Did she say you did
a
good
job? She said it was great.
Okay, good. Of course she did. You know, you're a protege. We will have much, much more with the pop-up owners at the Block 37 at the Chicago Design Market right after this on 720 WGN. 821 720 WGN. Talking with DeAndre Lemons, Joe Gennaro, Eric Garneau, and Will Byington. They are the owners of the pop-up stores at Block 37, the Chicago Design Market. And all of you guys have really nice success stories. You know, DeAndre, you quit your day. What was your day job?
I was working at a media agency in the West Loop.
Okay. And you just said, I'm done.
Yeah, I was on the sales team. I worked in advertising and media for the past 3 years and thought that, you know what, I've just had enough. And I really should follow what I really want to be doing every day, which is clothes.
What was it like, I guess, for each of you? I mean, you each had to kind of take a leap of faith to start your own business. You know, it's doing, obviously, you're passionate about everything that you do, whether it's fashion, games, photography. So what was it like to kind of take that leap of faith and say, you know what, this is going to be my full-time job. This is what I want to do.
So my story is somewhat similar to DeAndre's, except the industry I was in was just a lateral move. So I was managing a comic book and game store in the Northwest suburbs, and I had felt like I'd done kind of everything I could there, and I was hitting a ceiling. And so I gave the requisite, 6 months notice that I was going to leave. And then I kind of just spent a summer doing, Uber Eats and Postmates and trying to see, you know, what is next for me. I actually was looking at jobs in radio because I do some podcasts, too. So I got super far interviewing at an NPR affiliate in Pasadena. Didn't quite get it. But then I made friends with the Cards Against Humanity guys, and they're like, hey, we have this opportunity maybe you're interested in, and it kind of magically worked out. So, yeah, leap of faith paid off for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was lucky. I toured with a band for 3 years doing merchandise and promotions and marketing and photography.
Can you say what band or no?
Yeah, worked with a couple bands out of New Orleans, Cowboy Mouth and Better Than Ezra.
Oh, sure. And those little old bands. Yeah.
And it was great. Toured the country and always did photography as a hobby with them. I moved back to Naperville with my parents and tried to start a business that didn't take off doing entertainment promotions. And then, like I said, between friends and some other people being like, I'd buy your photography. That was in 2004 and kind of stuck with it ever since. And the neat thing with the pop-up shop that I did this year, also in the photography one, is I invited five other photographers, as I mentioned, one of which, Mr. Andy Mazur.
Of course.
From right here at WGN Radio. Andy, Troy Walsh from Drone Media Chicago, and also Howie and Jane Krause from Naperville. Uh-huh. And what's neat is kind of along the same lines of all of us as we're talking about this, you know, Andy and Troy and Jane and Howie had never even printed their photos till last year.
They
had these awesome photos, and like I said, they were online, but they'd never printed it. And so it's been real neat to see Andy and Drone Media Chicago, these amazing shots of the skyline from the air, and Howie and Jane do animals. They travel around and get wildlife, and it's really cool to see them be able to show and display their photos as well. And kind of the same thing as DeAndre. I'm a big believer in follow your dream, and you can always go back to where you were. So try it. And, you know, I encourage, whether you're a photographer or starting, if fashion is your passion,
yeah,
which I love that line.
I do too.
You know, if that's it, try it. You know, and in this day and age, there's so many amazing ways to promote yourself and that are free, between Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, everything. It's really, we're living in a special time where you can create your brand no matter what you do.
I have a question for you about when you have some really cool photographs of Tom Petty's last show at Wrigley. You have Bill Murray at the opening of, so you have a lot of Chicagoans or Chicago themed concerts that you've shot, obviously. Is that hard to do? I mean, do you get the artists ever critiquing you, saying, oh, that's not my good side? Or vice versa, like, that's the best I've ever looked? I mean, is it hard to shoot people and get their reactions, especially celebrities?
Incredibly hard. And people is, you know, that's why I do love Chicago images, because Wrigley Field can't talk back. You know, the river can't object, being like, oh, I was really feeling green that day. I didn't like the way I looked. You know, but it is definitely celebrities. The craziest thing is, I do believe everyone is a photographer. And especially in this day and age, every person has a camera on you at all times. That's good and bad, because celebs like Bill Murray, you know, I've been very lucky over the past 8 years to photograph the Murray Brothers Caddyshack Golf Tournament.
Uh-huh.
That's how I got in when they opened their restaurant in Rosemont. And being in that bubble, and I'm going to say I'm on the very far fringe of that bubble.
Okay.
But getting to know Joel Murray and Andy Murray and the brothers, and then Bill by default, kind of, everywhere they go, every minute they're being photographed.
Oh, wow.
And that's what's probably the toughest thing when you're shooting a celebrity. They're always being photographed. So it's been neat, you know, and then shooting shows at Wrigley, you know, a lot of times you only get to shoot the first three songs. And then as a professional, they escort you out. But what I've been lucky to do over the years is establish relationships. And mm-hmm. probably the biggest thing is, the worst thing in my life would be to be paparazzi.
Oh,
I can't
God.
Imagine that, comprehend that. And there's absolutely no place for that. Everybody deserves their own privacy. I do believe that. You know, and that's what's cool, is to be able to capture a moment, establish a relationship and a trust, so that when you are documenting these moments, it's pretty cool.
I love hearing the stories. Will, Joe, Eric, DeAndre, guys, hang out for a little bit, a couple more minutes. Okay, another half hour. I'm going to keep you guys. First, a couple of news, some business we got to take care of, and then the news, and back with these guys after this on 720 WGN. Speaking of Petty, 835, 721. I mean, it's 720, it's 835. My dyslexia is kicking in. DeAndre Lemons, Joe Gennaro, Eric Garneau, and Will Byington. They are all store owners and an inventor as well. Chicago Design Market, right downtown at Block 37. You guys, all the pop-up stores are open through Christmas. Get down there and see them. They're all Chicago-themed, or have Chicago inventors, or just have some sort of tie to Chicago. And Eric, I love the fact, you and Joe, that you guys, well, Joe's created this board game. You're an inventor and a creator as well. And I think at one point, board games kind of went, there was a time where they went away. When we were kids, we played like Clue and Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, and then there was a little bit of a lull, and then boom, they came back with Cards Against Humanity. Was Cards Against Humanity kind of the card game that brought everything back, would you guys say?
I'd say there's phases. I liken it to the craft beer boom, right? Where there's always kind of been this background of like Sam Adams, you know? So for the game nerds of us, that's like Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, and Catan is maybe the one you've heard of. So those were around, starting around 96, 98, 2000. We see these, they call them Euro, like strategy games that aren't like Monopoly, that you are a little bit underground. But kind of starting in the era of Cards Against Humanity, thanks to things like Kickstarter, all of a sudden games became way more accessible, way more in the public consciousness. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it was like growing up playing my mom's copy of Clue. And playing Monopoly and stuff like that, and going, oh yeah, this is all right. It could be better.
Right.
We could figure this out. So
right.
I think a lot of people of the same generation were like, you know what? We're gonna do this a little bit better. We're gonna figure out a way to make it a little more what we want, mm-hmm. a little more interactive, a little deeper. because I always get into a debate about whether something is a game or an activity.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Game of War, where you just flip cards, that's not a game to me. That's a way to kill time. Two robots can do that.
So or go fish, maybe.
Yeah, that's like a good starter game, because you have to make choices. I think it's all about trying to give players meaningful choices, and that's the big thing of a game.
What were your favorite games growing up?
I mean, I liked a lot of the classics. I had the Milton Bradley, like, Operation and stuff. A game that really meant a lot to me was HeroQuest, which may be, like, a couple nerds out there, like, oh, yeah, that one. So now there's, like, really good versions of HeroQuest called, like, Descent and Gloomhaven, which are among my favorites. But again, I am very nerdy.
A lot of my starters were, like, Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, I remember that
Life?
One. Yeah,
remember
Life? Yeah, with the big wheel and the little pegs in the car.
You guys, I know you guys have. You guys are chomping at the bit. What are your favorite games, or what were they as well?
Go ahead.
Well, it's funny because I'm sitting here thinking what my favorite game is, and it's very related to what I do. Mob Madness. You guys probably never played that or had that.
What is that? I haven't played
that.
So
you like owned a mall.
Awesome. Great start.
Mall Madness. I loved it.
And you tried to put like different stores in different spots, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like shoe store and then like a department store.
Remember Life, Payday.
I always liked Mousetrap. Ooh. Mousetrap, where you would play you even have the flip over the trap. You
know? I like Fiddly Bits. I had a game called 1313 Dead End Drive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was like a guillotine and a chandelier that fell. So there was a lot of that where it was, just like little things you can tinker with and
sure.
set it up. It took longer to set up than actually play those games.
Someone texting in Parcheesi from the 312. I remember that game. Do you remember that?
I don't know.
It was kind of like Sorry.
Yeah. I had Parcheesi, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Rummy Cub? Rummy Cube?
Yes.
Rummy Cube.
So my grandmother, Louise, Lou and Maddie and Lou, that was her favorite game, Rummy Cube.
Was it really?
Yeah, it's what we play every time when we're together.
I think that's so cute. My grandma and I would always play like Gin Rummy, you know? And she would, it was crazy. She'd be like, are you waiting for the Two of Hearts? I'm like, what? You know, she card read. Should have, you know, gone to Vegas with her.
Yeah, no kidding.
My favorite, you guys will love my Cards of Humanity story. I think I've told this on the air before. My goddaughter at the time was, I want to say, a freshman or sophomore in high school. And I always tried to, at the time she was my only goddaughter, and her name's Natalie, and I said, I always tried to get her something cool. Like, I wanted to be the cool godmother who got her. So one year I said, what do you want for Christmas? And she said, I want this game called Cards Against Humanity. I had never heard of it. And I thought, I want to get that for her. Well, I tried to order it probably on Amazon or something, and it was sold out. And there was a back order. You know, it was like 2 months back ordered. So it finally came. It came in between her birthday and Christmas. And she's like, you are the best godmother ever. This is awesome. My friends in school, we're all going to play this. And her mom, my cousin, Denise, called me and she said, what did you just buy my daughter? She's like, you are disowned. I'm like, why? She went, have you seen the cards? And I went, oh, it's an adults only kind of a game.
Might as well have sent it with like a pack of cigarettes.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I have definitely been in situations where a young girl will ask me with her mom there, is it okay if I buy this? And I have to look to the mom and then I let them deal their dynamic themselves.
Yeah,
I'm not going to make that call. Yeah.
Deal with it yourself. Absolutely. And Deandra, your story, you quit your job. I love that. It's after your grandparents. And at what age did you know you wanted to do something either in marketing or fashion, or this was kind of your road?
Yeah, so my first job when I was in high school, I worked at a boutique in New York. So I knew that, you know, it was fun and it was fine, but I didn't think that that's actually what I really wanted to do. I knew I always liked clothes. I mean, you could always find me shopping on a Saturday. And if I'm not shopping on my days off, I'm shopping online. So it's funny now because now since I shop for the shop, I don't shop for myself. So I don't find myself on Saturdays going to the mall or to Michigan Avenue. I find myself, what sweaters should I put in the shop? Like, what are people going to like?
Right.
So it's kind of taken away my shopping as a pastime, and now it's shopping as my job, which is cool.
What are some of your top sellers?
My goodness. When I get some of the sweaters in, they sell out almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
They're just really soft and they're called chenille sweaters. The hats, they sell, I mean, I probably sell maybe 200 hats a week. I mean, it's
crazy. Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah. When people come into the store, they're freezing from being outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh my goodness, I need a hat. So I'm at the right place at the right time, and then they can find one.
What's it been like going from, you know, basically online business or kind of word of mouth to brick and mortar stores, you know, like the pop-ups. It seems like it's been very successful. Are you getting, is the traffic mainly tourists? Is it Chicagoans? Tell us a little bit about, you know, people stopping in all the stores, all your respective stores.
You know, I'll say one of the best things. So 2 years ago, right after the Cubs won the World Series, I was looking at doing this pop-up, and I had this grand vision of opening a photography gallery, an art gallery on like Armitage or Southport in a neighborhood, and do a real storefront. And one of the things I found through Aaron and Tanner at the Chicago Design Museum is the beauty of Block 37 is it's right in the heart of the Loop.
Oh, cool.
It's the perfect location for what I think all of us are doing, because we're right next to Chris Kindle Mart.
Mm-hmm.
We're right next to Macy's, the windows on State Street. We're basically between those two. The other beauty of Block 37 is the pedway. You can connect to almost the entire Loop, but without going outside.
Yeah.
That helps. And so it is cool being right in the heart of the Chicago design area and design museum, because people can get to us easily. That's my biggest thing that I've found helps. And then it is cool just for people to be able to come in and see what they see. You know, now you're so used to looking at photography at like a 3-inch square,
right?
You know, on your phone.
It's nice to see it.
It's
on
cool
the wall.
To see it, like,
yeah.
3 foot by 4 foot.
And there's canvas. There's boards that I think Andy has some of his on photo boards.
Other thing that Andy Mazur has some. We actually all of us have on metal.
And
printing on the metal is just so vibrant.
Okay,
and so cool.
How is it done? Can you give away the secrets?
It's top secret.
Okay.
If I told you, I'd have to. Actually, that's probably the saddest thing.
Process?
Well, that's probably, it's not, because there's vendors and online ways to do it.
Okay.
And
which don't do that. Go in these pop-up stores.
That's probably the biggest thing that kills me when people come in, because I wish I could say I labored for hours in a dark room and created these masterpieces. It's funny though, for me, a lot of, even some of my pictures that I have in the pop-up were all iPhone shots.
Yeah, but you showed me, there's one that you have, it's Wrigley Field, and Wrigley Field is black, more, it's not completely black and white, but it's not in color, and the only thing that's in color in the photograph is the Chicago flag, which I think is stunning, and you showed me how you did it, and it was digitally, and I think that takes a lot of time too.
Yeah, and it's fun, it's what's cool is, like I said earlier about everybody being a photographer now, the beauty of, with your cell phone, you can create art anywhere, anytime.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a saying that another photographer has created that says, the best camera is the one that you have with you.
Yeah.
And everyone has a camera on you. And so that's what's neat is being able to bring that into a real space. And another soapbox for another time is, I do believe everyone should print their photos. I really do. I think we've gotten into a place where so many people I know say, oh, all my best photos are on Facebook. What if Facebook goes the way of MySpace?
Right.
And, you know, we all need our future documented. Yeah. I do believe that. Our future documented and our past documented.
Every time I take a trip, if I take a big trip to Greece or Italy or wherever, if I travel, I always take the pictures, even if they're on my phone, which 99.9% are now. In fact, my last two trips have been all on my phone. I print those out.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do a service.
And everyone should do that. And now there are cool ways, and come to our pop-ups at Block 37. You can see the way it looks on metal, on canvas.
Yeah.
And it really is stunning. And there's nothing like giving a gift of a photo and seeing people's reaction, like I said.
All of your stores are very homey. And, you know, I feel, you know, very comfortable. And when I went from store to store to store, I just felt very comfortable in each one. Mainly, I think, because you guys were playing games. And, you guys were so funny. You're like, we cannot stage this game. There has to be 3 people playing.
We are also in a comedy group, so I'd like to say that's the comedians in us. Yeah. But it was the game nerds.
I mean, yeah, I'm partial to the rules because I spent a year and a half developing them. So,
right.
Kevin and I spent a year and a half developing Competition Kitchen before we were able to take it to Kickstarter, which kind of goes back to what Will was saying earlier about finding all of these avenues online of being able to kind of propel your business and get it started.
Is that really hard when you come up? Okay, so you said you and your writing partner or your production partner, Kevin, when you come up with an idea, so you have to have, do you have to have like photo cards? Or do you have to have everything? And then where do you, I mean, do you go to the idea store or the inventor store and just say, hey, here's what we want to do? Because all the pictures on your cards, you know, it's a kitchen, it's a cooking game. So there's like steak and beets, and they're cool. cool little cartoon photos. I mean, so kind of walk us through step by step what you have to do.
Probably the first physical step is index cards. Because you talk about it, you list it. I love spreadsheets. I love bars and charts and columns and conditional formatting and all that stuff. So a lot of my creative stuff lives there. But once we wanted to get it into a physical realm, we did a lot of index cards and shuffling them up so you could kind of deal with them, handle them. When it came to the art, we were really lucky, and we got a local Chicago comic artist who has a wonderful watercolor style. His name is Kevin Budnick, and he was exactly what we wanted. When we started kind of tossing ideas around, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to get something kind of homey, something kind of looks a little kitschy, like watercolor? Yeah, like Kevin's. Yeah, what could we do? Who's like Kevin? Yeah, all right, well, here's a short list. Wait a minute. Why don't we ask Kevin?
Yeah.
So Kevin and I reached out to Kevin Budnick, and it's the art is one of my favorite parts of the game, but I think it's also because I don't ever feel critical of the art because I didn't do it. So it's easy for me to be on the outside of it and just appreciate it for what it is.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It really is. All right, more with these guys after this on 720 WGN. 51, 720 WGN. A few more minutes with Deandra Lemons from Maddie and Lou, Joe Gennaro, and Eric Arnault from the Chicago Playtest Society, and Will Byington from Will Byington Photography. Thank you guys all for being here tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was so much fun meeting you, and it was so much fun just hanging out with you guys at each of your stores. I guess we have a couple minutes left here. I just want you guys to maybe, these are your final thoughts, what you want everyone to know either about your show or what the experience has been like for you at the pop-ups or anything you want everyone to know before Christmas, before the pop-ups close down.
Do you want? I'll go first.
All right, we'll go first, Will.
No, it's been great. Thanks so much again for having us, and thanks to Andy Mazur for helping set this up. Also, it's been cool. You know, it's really, like I said, our little place in the world, our little shop has, like I said, it's a cool collective from Howie and Jane Krause. Krause Images, you can kind of find them, I believe, their website. Troy Walsh, Drone Media Chicago, is his site. Andy Mazur Photo.
Yeah.
And then Will Byington Photo. But my website's just willbyington.com.
B-Y-I-N-G-T-O-N.
That's it, Will Byington. And same on Twitter and Instagram. And I do recommend everybody follow each of us on Instagram. You know, I've learned so much from Deandra, for example, with her Instagram stories and just the way she uses social media. It's fascinating. So it's cool. So, you know, check it out. Will Byington, like I said, Instagram and Twitter, and come see us. The biggest thing is, you know, everybody needs a custom gift.
Yes.
And one of the best things that, like we mentioned earlier, for me is we do the custom coasters.
And they are bring so us cool.
Your
They're so
personal
nice.
Images.
Yeah, get those. And they only take a couple minutes to make.
Yeah, we tell everybody, what I tell people is about an hour.
Okay.
Because
except if you're like
does
me,
go
if, you,
quick.
If you take it hot off the press and hold it, you know, that it's, always feels really good.
So we have I have a 400 degree heat press that I need a name for. So actually, I will give away a set or two sets of coasters for the best name that somebody can come up with. It's this little cool clamp heat press
looks like a waffle maker.
It looks exactly like a waffle maker.
Flat.
Heats up to 400 degrees. So if you come up with the name for that, I'll give away two sets.
All right, 312-981-7200. You get a free set of photo coasters.
Or hit us up on Instagram,
Twitter. Or go to Insta,
But because I know we're limited on time.
Okay.
So as far as Chicago Playtest Society, something that was brought up earlier was kind of the accessibility of games and how they're more in the forefront than ever. And something that our company takes really seriously is this idea of building bridges, not walls. Gamers can kind of have this very insular culture of, you know, when I was talking about Gloomhaven earlier, I'm sure everybody's eyes glossed over. Like, what? Yeah, you don't want to hear about Gloomhaven. So our pitch to you is come to our pop-up. We will find you a game that is cool and friendly, and everybody that you need that game for will enjoy. And it doesn't have to be mystifying and weird and nerdy. Everybody can like games, just like everybody can like music and fashion. Games are for everybody. I think that's what Cards Against Humanity showed, and that's what we are trying to show in our actions and our sales every day. Also, I would go to ChicagoPlaytestSociety.com if I were you. Sign up for our mailing list, because we typically do really cool pop-up events, and I'm sure next year we'll be doing some really rad stuff. So do that.
And you before Joe goes, best board game, 630 Texter says, is Twilight Imperium.
Speaking of
okay,
really
so you got a bunch of gamers listening.
That's like a 6-hour. That's an all-day game. I love it.
very good game. Accessibility into the game is definitely something that we thought about while developing Competition Kitchen as well. Like I said, everybody eats. A lot of people cook. A ton of people love cooking competition shows. Iron Chef was always my favorite, watching the chairman bite into that green pepper right before the show started.
I love that. Your secret ingredient is... onions.
Yeah. With these very specific onions grown in this one place.
Exactly.
And they taste like feet. Good luck. So that's the spirit that we wanted to capture in our game. And I'm very biased, but I think it would make a great holiday gift for somebody who enjoys cooking, enjoys eating, enjoys watching those shows. We try to put the creativity in the hands of the players. So the cards, the ingredients are kind of dots. We let everybody connect the dots and tell their story and use their own experience, whether they want to make something up or use something from their real life to kind of filter through and share a story with their friends and family.
Awesome. Deandra, final thoughts?
Yeah.
What do you want people to know?
If you're in Chicago, definitely come visit me in my pop-up shop. But if not, make sure you check me out online. That's where I started. So MattyandLou.com. A lot of people don't know if it's Maddie or Matty. It's MattyandLou.com. And more importantly, follow me on Instagram, because as Will mentioned, I'm all over Instagram. I'm constantly taking live videos when I get new arrivals. Like tonight, I have a few up already. So definitely check me out there. And yeah.
And our website is www.competition.kitchen.
Excellent.
So not .com, competition.kitchen.
.kitchen. You guys are so much fun. Again, the address, 108 North State Street. It is right in Block 37. It's the Chicago Design Market. Check out all their pop-up stores. They're awesome. Through Christmas, thank you guys so much for being here.
Yay. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we'll podcast this at WGNradio.com. More after this on WGN. Man. Speaking of the man. Thank you, Don. 909-720 WGN. Well, we just spoke so fondly of Andy Mazur, our dear friend and baseball expert and sports guru and weekend sports anchor here on WGN. Andy, your friends speak very highly of you.
Script exactly how I had it written.
I know, right? We missed you on Sunday, but we had you on Friday, and your photographs are just spectacular.
I appreciate it so much. It's a labor of love. It's a lot of fun. I was listening to a little bit of the folks that were on, and, you know, Will kind of sells himself short. I mean, this guy is a real talent, and he's the one that kind of pulled it all together. So he's the guy that that really gets the credit for putting all this together and putting us together. You know, being able to display these works of art, and they are art. It's a special feeling. It's fun.
It really is, and truly, it's the best of the best. I mean, I went in, I knew Will, and I knew you, and I was blown away by, of course, your photographs and what you had to offer, and Will, and then he made us the photo coasters, and then Deandra's hats, which were just adorable, and everything is priced so nicely. There's nothing in any store that I went into and thought, oh my God, that is just so, you know, so everything's affordable too, which is so nice around the holidays.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know it's accessible, and you know you can walk through. As Will was saying, we're right there in the heart of the Loop, and a lot of people will pass through Block 37 and not really even realize that they're in Block 37. You know, the Pedway is a great deal for the stores that are in there as well, and it's basically four shops in one stop, so you could get a lot of things done just by visiting us up on the third floor in the Chicago Design Museum. So it's accessible, it's easy, and again, as you pointed out, it's very affordable.
Well, get on up there. It's 108 North State Street, and it is through Christmas, and your work will be on display, and just check it out. It's really cool. But I did want to talk to you, Andy, about Harold Baines going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah
surprise.
You know,
I want to ask you, first of all, I mean, deserving? Yes, right?
I agree. I think so, yeah. You know, it's funny that we talk about Harold Baines and Lee Smith is the other guy that was voted in. Yeah, so two Chicago guys with extreme Chicago ties. So basically with the Hall of Fame now, if you're off the ballot, your name gets brought up every once in a while by these committees, and this one is called the Today's Game Era Committee. It's one of four committees that meet representing the different eras of baseball, and these are kind of forgotten guys that have had great careers, but didn't last on the regular ballot all that often. You have to have a certain percentage of votes to be able to stay on the original ballot, the ballot that the baseball writers vote for. and then there's a certain number of years that you stay on, and if you don't get elected, then you fall off. So there's some names. You know, Jack Morris was a guy that last year got in, or the year before got in. He was a terrific pitcher for the Tigers and won a World Series with the Minnesota Twins, but wasn't somebody that was really top of mind because he didn't stay on the ballot. I think the same thing can really be said for these two guys, and especially in Harold Baines' case, and I guess the Lee Smith's case for a while too, because there wasn't a whole lot of coverage. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of games. There was really the NBC Game of the Week and your local telecast, and that was pretty much it. I mean, you really didn't get a chance to see a lot of the other guys play. And, you know, there's a lot of people didn't get to see Harold Baines play because of when he played. But, you know, 14 years with the White Sox, he had a 22-year baseball career and was only not even 200 hits shy of 3,000 for his career and hit over almost 400 home runs and was one of the first real guys that was a DH in person. He was the guy that was basically slated to be the DH. A lot of guys now, Edgar Martinez is one of those guys that is considered the DH of this era of baseball. But it's nice to see him get recognized, and it's really nice to see Lee Smith get recognized too. And there's a lot of debate about Lee and closers and DHs in general about the way baseball is played. But, you know, baseball is such a specialized sport, and more so now than I think even was back then. These were the guys that were the leaders in these fields, so to speak. I mean, Lee Smith retired as the all-time saves leader at 478, and now that's been lapped by about Trevor Hoffman, who's in the Hall of Fame now, and Mariano Rivera, who will get in on his first eligibility ballot as well. So I think it's great recognition for both of these guys, and I'm glad to see that they both got in.
Absolutely. Smith and Baines both debuted in Chicago. I didn't realize this, Andy. During the 1980 season, Smith, of course, with the mm-hmm. Cubs, went on to record 478 saves, while Baines started, of course, with the White Sox and mm-hmm. had 2,866 hits. So both very well deserving. I'm almost wondering what took so long, especially for Lee Smith.
Yeah, you know, there's been a stigma against both of these positions for some reason. There's been a stigma against closers. There's been a stigma against DHs. And I think it's because, a closer, again, is a very specialized situation where you're coming on and now you're pitching an inning. Back then, when Lee Smith was pitching toward the beginning of his career, but not toward the end, guys were pitching three innings for saves. Now you see maybe three pitches and you get a save. The guys that were DHs were thought of as guys that didn't have a position to play on the field, and they were only one-dimensional types of players that could only hit and didn't really contribute much to their franchises or to their ball clubs. And I think now we're kind of seeing the way that managers use their bullpens these days and the way that managers would kill to have a guy like Harold Baines on their team.
Yeah.
Team right now that they could count on for 25 home runs a year and nearly 100 runs batted in, I think everybody would sign up for that. And I think there's just more awareness of the way that these positions, what they mean to a team and what they mean for a long season of baseball. They're finally getting the recognition I think that they deserve, and I think these two guys are very deserving.
I agree. What was strange, though, Andy, when I knew we'd be speaking, I did a little research, and mm-hmm. I was on MLB.com, and one mm-hmm. of the headlines, of course, is who was Harold Baines, you know, his stats, blah, blah, blah. But then there was a column that said, why are people so mad about Baines getting in? And I found a couple stories like that. Why?
Well, again, I think it's because, I think you pointed it out, too. I mean, these guys are not top of mind anymore, and it took a long time, and I think these were players that were considered to be very good players, but not Hall of Fame players. And I think there's another line of thought where if there's voters now that won't vote for Barry Bonds because of the allegations of steroids.
Sure.
There's those that, you know, you can't vote for Pete Rose because Pete Rose is banned from baseball. And they probably feel like there's other deserving candidates that have not been able to get in for one reason or another. Now, to me, Barry Bonds and Pete Rose, those are kind of self-inflicted. I mean, that's something that they could have, you know, gotten away from because, you know, admit what you did, and, you know, I think everything would have been forgotten in those cases. But, you know, the thing I think that people are angry about is just that these are players that were considered to be in the Hall of Very Good, not the Hall of Fame. And there's right. some that are such traditionalists that, you know, and I kind of agree with them to an extent. There's 325 players now in the Hall of Fame after this class goes in. Mm-hmm. And it's just with these two. That brings it up to 325. And I'll bet you if you started over again and you cleared house and you said, okay, we're going to do it only by merit, we're going to do it only by the most deserving players, I think you'd probably still get 325.
So you don't think that's too many? You think that's just
right? I don't think if you really looked at it, if some of those guys in there, there's not a whole lot of guys you can say, well, no, he doesn't deserve it, or no, he shouldn't be in there. I think there's more of the people that say, well, why isn't this guy in? Why isn't this guy in? Because they have, you know, their own biases, and it doesn't make them bad people. It just makes them, you know, pretty loyal to one guy or another because maybe they grew up watching him, maybe they covered him. It's a different system, you know, with Major League Baseball, the way that the baseball writers kind of control who gets in and who doesn't. In other sports, it's a little different. You know, in football, for example, it goes to a whittling down committee. Basically, you get a few names, and then you whittle it down to 25. They whittle it down to 10, and then they whittle it down to the 5 that get in. And there's discussion. There's actual discussion in a room at the Super Bowl where a guy will actually bring up a name and nominate a name and then speak on that player's behalf. And then they pose it to a vote, and then that's how you determine who gets in. So it's a little different in other sports, but yeah, I still think that the way they do it in baseball is good, and I like the fact that they're now recognizing some players that may have gotten slighted by their peers or by the writers. And, you know, the perfect example is Ron Santo.
Of course, yes.
I mean, again, I speak very biasedly about Ronnie because of my relationship with him, but you know, it's funny because I printed up a blank stat sheets for the late Tony Gwynn when I was in San Diego. And it was right after Tony Gwynn had gotten into the Hall of Fame in 2007. And I put one piece of paper down that had Brooks Robinson's stats on it. Brooks Robinson, the great third baseman for the Orioles, who got in a long time ago. And I put one with Ron Santo's stats on it. And I didn't put the names on it. And I gave them to Tony Gwynn. And I said, if you had to pick one of these guys for the Hall of Fame, which of these guys would you pick, not knowing who these people are? And he studied them. You know, he took a day to kind of look at it. And I trust him that he didn't look anything up because he was not very computer savvy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he picked Santo.
Wow. See, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
That was a smart way to do it, Andy.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that.
You take all the bias out of it. You take all the bias out of it.
Right. And you know what? There is a part of me I really do like this way, too. You know, and I like these other committees because for this reason, because now Harold Baines and Lee Smith are about to be Hall of Famers. Can you hang on the line just for a few more minutes, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, stand by. We're talking to the great Andy Mazur, our baseball guru here at WGN. We'll have more after this on WGN.
Talking baseball.
Talking with Andy Mazur, 720 WGN at 9:23 in the evening about Harold Baines and Lee Smith finally getting the call to the Hall. And, you know, Andy, what was so heartwarming was seeing the speeches, of course, and Harold Baines getting very choked up when he was talking about his wife and his four kids and his mom, and his dad wasn't there. He said his dad was his hero, and he admitted that he didn't expect to get the phone call. He said he's never been one to sit around and think about it. So, again, very humble from Harold Baines today. Oh.
Get in, just because of, you know, falling off the ballot. When they did, you know, Baines was on there 5 times, and then it's 5% you have to get to stay on it, and he didn't get the 5% in his fifth and what turned out to be his final year on the regular ballot. And, you know, there's a chance now that Lee Smith is going to get to go in with Mariano Rivera. Mariano Rivera, the longtime closer of the New York Yankees, eligible for the first time this year, has the all-time saves lead now with over 650. So Smith's 478, around third on that list, but kind of a cool dynamic that if they're able to go in together the year after Trevor Hoffman goes in with the first guy to 600 saves. And, you read a lot of stuff about both of these guys and, you know, the debate about whether they should be in or whether they shouldn't be in. It's really difficult for us you know, as baseball broadcasters and as those that cover the teams. It's so difficult to compare what Harold Baines did to somebody that's playing now because the game has changed so much. The game has changed in ways on the field. The game has changed off the field. Again, as I mentioned earlier in our first segment, just about the fact that there's so much more visibility for players these days than there were when both of those guys played. It's almost doing them a disservice because, you know, and frankly, a lot of the guys that are voting for the baseball writers never saw those guys play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult to vote on somebody that you really have no clue about what they were as a player. You're just looking at a bunch of numbers. You're looking at a bunch of stats, which sometimes tell the story and sometimes lie quite a bit. So I'm glad that these committees have been formed that are better a representation of at least people that have seen these guys play and what they did on the field.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that those guys are getting another chance and an opportunity to get in because, you know, Lee Smith basically set the standard, led the league in saves four years and, again, retired as the all-time saves leader. And that was kind of a throwaway stat. People were just going in and throwing an inning, and there they were, and they got rewarded with a save. And Baines, you know, he's in the top 50 in hits in the entire game. That shouldn't be overlooked, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Well, do they get decide? What do they decide which cap they wear when they go in? Well, like, will Baines?
No, I think the Hall of Fame figures that out now for them.
Okay.
Because Jim Thome actually went in with the Indians hat. You know, spent a lot of time with the White Sox. I do believe that, you know, Baines spent 14 of his 22 years with the White Sox, was a coach with the White Sox in 05 when they won it all, and I think that he'll go in as a White Sox. Now, for Lee Smith, it's a little bit different. Lee Smith played for about 50 teams.
Yeah,
only 32 teams. So I don't know what they're going to do as far as his cap at this point, but that's a good problem for both of these guys to have.
Absolutely, Andy. Absolutely.
Great problem.
Well, hey, Andy, thank you so much for your time. I know you had a marathon day again, and you got your pop-up on, so your pop-up shop going on. So
absolutely.
Thank you, as always, my friend.
You got it, AD. Take care.
All right, you too. Andy, where can people follow you real quick? Twitter, Facebook?
Twitter, Andy _Mazur, M-A-S-U-R, the number one. And, of course, if you're interested in the photos, again, it's andymazurphoto.com.
You are the best. Thanks, Andy.
See ya.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. More after this on 720 WGN. God, I love this song. And I know why you're playing this, Michael. Thank you for doing this. We want to introduce you to Cameo, not the 80s band, but the service that allows you to pay for personalized video shout-outs from athletes, celebrities, social media influencers, and the founder and CEO of it all is Stephen Galanis. Hey, Stephen.
How you doing?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for
having
me.
You go by Steve?
Steven's fine.
Okay, good. A good Greek boy, of course. Our roots are deep. You're a Northside guy.
Yeah, my mom would also say, she's like, if I wanted you to be a Steve, I would have named you Steve.
I know, right? Well, I said, is it, you know, do you go by Galanis or Galanis? Yeah,
Galanis
is right. I was telling you off the air, we had Pam Panjotopoulos in earlier, but of course, you know, I have to call her Pam Panziotopoulos, and she's like, you can just say Panjotopoulos, that's fine. So, but welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about Cameo.
So Cameo is a platform where you can book personalized video shout-outs from over 6,000 different athletes, actors, celebrities. So essentially imagine getting someone like Mike Singletary to wish your dad Merry Christmas. You can do that on our platform.
Okay. How did you come up with this idea? I mean, it's genius. I'm surprised, you know, we haven't been doing this for years, but how'd you come up with the idea?
We had this idea that selfies were the new autograph, and actually we had the idea leaving my Yaya's funeral of all places.
Oh.
My co-founder was an NFL agent, and he had gotten one of his players named Cassius Marsh to record a video congratulating this guy on having his first son. And when he showed me that, like, immediately I had the eureka moment, and it was like, we need to, like, create a marketplace for this so people could buy them on demand.
Okay. Is it any celebrity, any athlete, or is it only celebrities who agree to do it, like, kind of to buy into it?
Yeah, right now it's only the people that have agreed and signed up for our platform. Okay. But, you know, that's 6,000 strong now and growing every single day. And then if there's people that you want that we don't have, you can actually put your email in and say that person. So when we get them, we email you and let you know.
And what's the process? Okay, so say I want, okay, say like the Bengals or I don't know, somebody like that or some Angelina Jolie. Let's go there because that's more. She's an A-lister. Is that a big task to try and get someone that big? And do you have to, what's the process that you go to try to get those people to be a part of Cameo?
The process is really the same for everybody. The bigger issue is that we try to optimize for amount of videos created. So someone like Angelina Jolie, if she came on for $100,000, there's only so many people that could afford that. We try to optimize for, you know, how many cameos are made. So for us, our sweet spot's actually more like $40 is the average video we sell on the site today.
Really?
Yep.
Who's the most popular? Oh, who are some of the most popular?
The people that get booked the most are actually a lot of like influencers, so social media stars, people that were big on YouTube or Vine. Some more popular people that have really, you know, taken off recently. Mr. Wonderful, if you watch Shark Tank, has absolutely crushed it. We do really well with The Real Housewives. And a lot of NFL, like Hall of Famers, do really well with us as well.
So do they call you? Are they at the point of calling you and wanting to be a part of this?
I wish. We're still going after them.
And okay.
We do have a talent-to-talent referral system, though. So if, you know, Mike Singletary referred Mike Ditka, like, he would actually get compensated for giving us that lead, and that's really helped us grow.
No kidding. Who's been the nicest so far? Just, like, maybe the top two nicest who have been over the top, like, yeah, this is so cool, I want to get involved with this.
Andy Milonakis actually has been incredible. When he first got on, he tweeted out about it and was like, a million people have tried to do things similar. These are the first guys that nailed it. I think he's referred 20 people. But honestly, everybody I've met has been incredible through the process. I haven't met anybody that's really been a pain in the butt.
Okay, that was my next question. Has anybody been... who maybe can remain nameless? You know, is it like an athlete or anyone who's just been like, nah, I don't want to be a part of that?
I mean, yeah, there's people that say no, but for us, we would rather them say no than say yes and not do the videos.
Right, right. Is it easier with athletes or celebrities as far as actors, actresses?
It really just depends on your personality, right? If you're someone that loves social media and loves interacting with your fans, like, this is easy. You probably have done this for free one-off already. If you're the person that says no to every picture or never signs an autograph for someone, then, like, this isn't going to be for you.
Yeah.
And that's fine. We only want people that are willing to do it.
And how flattering, though. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, you approaching someone and saying, hey, this person wants to pay to have a video message from you. I would think flattery is probably one of the first emotions people feel.
Yeah, I think they really love, well, number one, there's a lot of reasons why the talent does it. The money can be really good, but what's most impactful is the reactions that they see from the fans when they get this. So if you go to our website, cameo.com, you can actually go on and look at a lot of these reaction videos that we get. So I buy you a video and I film you getting Jeremy Roenick or some person that you, like, adore.
I adore Jeremy Roenick. It's funny you said that.
Yeah, Jeremy's like newer on the platform and has been making incredible cameos. But, like, imagine, you know, I get Jeremy Roenick to, like, wish you Merry Christmas and you're freaking out.
Yeah.
And I film that reaction and then we post it on our site. And, you know, that's so, it's one of those things that the people love having that impact, especially because before Cameo, they had to, like, physically go see you, but now they can do this from the Uber, they can be traveling,
oh, sure.
They can be anywhere in the world, and they can impact with their fans all over the world at scale, you know, which is really interesting.
And they can be anywhere, right? I mean, they don't need to come to your studio, they can just do it wherever they are.
They do it right from their phone.
How long is the video?
The videos can be anywhere from, there's no cap on them or how long they can be or how short, but the requester has 250 characters, so about the length of a tweet, and then, you know, the talent will then kind of add their own pizzazz to it and show their personality.
How about a cast? I mean, if can I say, oh, I love the cast of, say, Chicago Fire? Or someone local, is that doable, or does it have to just be an individual?
We do have a couple bands that are on there as a band, but, like, it is harder to, you know, to kind of coordinate, like, everybody being in the right space. What's actually a lot more interesting is when you book someone from Chicago Fire, and then they get, like, a couple of their cast members to make a cameo in the cameo.
Oh,
that's pretty cool.
That is so cool. All right, so tell me about a young Stephen Galanis. Did you always knew you were going to be an entrepreneur?
I think anybody that knows me, I was never the person that was just going to go work for somebody. But really, I got my start as an entrepreneur in college.
Uh-huh.
I went to Duke and I went with, another Greek from Glenview named Zach Moritas. And, this was the early days of Facebook. And my first business was actually throwing parties at the local bar, but we used the power of Facebook before people. This is back when you needed to be in college to be on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
So we amassed a Facebook network of over 12,000 students, and we could send one, you know, event out and everybody would show up. So I've always, you know, since college, was kind of looking to start my own thing. After that, I came back, I was trading, I did some movie production, I worked at LinkedIn, all great jobs, but, like, I was always waiting for that idea to go
right,
do what I'm doing now.
I love that fact. I mean, you're a young, you're successful. Let's check out, Michael, you got a couple of these ready to go, right?
Yeah, I do, in fact. We got our first one here. You might know him by name, a former WGN host, actually.
Really?
How much do you think David Kaplan, TV host and radio guy?
50 cents. A dollar.
You're kind of far off. Okay, you think go upwards.
$100.
Ooh. Well, that's too much.
Yeah, Cap's not worth $100. Well, we love him and know him. That's why we can say that.
Well, in our hearts, he's worth $100. He's worth $1,000.
Oh, he's priceless in our hearts.
But on the great site Cameo, he goes for $30 for a message from David
what?
Kaplan.
Okay, let's hear David Kaplan. Can you play him?
Oh, yeah, I can. Oh, yeah, of course I can.
Okay, yeah. Can we play a little? Yeah, I don't want to take your copy right away.
This is for a guy named Mike.
Okay.
Hey, congrats to Mike and Tim. I know you guys have been traveling the country for 8 years. Performing is no easy deal, no small feat. So I hope you pack the house at the North Shore Center on November the 9th. Chicago fans, get off your butts. Come see these guys. Handicap this. They are awesome. Hey, I'm really proud of you guys. To be able to put yourself out there and work like that, you deserve a pat on the back. So best of luck to you guys. Hope you kick ass. Hope you sell a lot of tickets. And I hope you make millions. This is David Kaplan at NBC Sports Chicago and ESPN 1000. All the best to you guys. Go get them.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I'd say, how cool is that?
Cap is one of the nicest people ever.
Cap came into our office for the first time, not this summer, but last summer, and is just, like, his content's awesome. If you're, like, anybody that is a professional host, this is actually something that's interesting, right? Like, Cap's cameos are better than, like, a Cub or a Blackhawks cameo.
He's
because
so good.
He's a professional at putting sentences together, right?
Yes.
And you guys probably know from interviewing talent, a lot of times the best person isn't the biggest personality or isn't the most articulate. So the thing that's so great about this medium is it's creating a new type of star. So someone like Cap could become as big as anybody in Chicago on Cameo.
He's awesome. I think that's really, really cool. So you don't tell that, you just give them a little bit of information about, so it was these guys' birthday. So you just give them a little bit of info and then he does the rest?
Yeah, the way it works, actually, it's almost like a mix between Tinder and Snapchat. And I know our viewers or our listeners can't see this, but I'll show you what it looks like.
Okay, so it's an app.
So the way it works, they open their app up and the request comes in. Okay. They read the request. They can either accept it or decline it. When they accept it, a teleprompter opens up.
Oh.
They can literally read off that, get all the critical details, who's it for, where's the concert at, whatever it is. But then they add their own thing. They send it off and get paid immediately.
And again, if I want to request somebody, I can put the request in and then wait to hear from you.
Yeah, so the way it works is you go to cameo.com. You can browse through our 6,000 talent. You find somebody you like. You put in who's the video for, because they're almost all bought as gifts. It's not usually you buying Cap for yourself. It's like you buying...
I would buy Cap for myself.
Yeah, it's you buying Cap to roast Mike, right? Or something like that. So
exactly.
then what you do is, you know, you'd put in your email address because you want this to come to you so you could give it to Mike or give it to that person.
Got it.
You type the message in, 250 characters or less, and then... you authorize your credit card just like you're opening a tab at a bar or at a restaurant.
Yeah.
We don't charge you until the video's done. The talent has 7 days to turn it around, and the average video turns around in under 36 hours.
So if after 7 days you don't hear anything, can you resubmit for your celebrity?
Exactly. We send you an email, hey, sorry, they didn't get it done. Click resubmit and resets... authorized for another 7 days.
I'm so doing this. I know what I'm doing all day tomorrow. I'm buying you guys all video gifts, but I'm not telling you who. That'll be your secret.
It's actually fun, too, because that almost shows how well you know the person that you're giving a gift to,
right?
Like, for me, I've met a lot of crazy people through this last year, but my all-time favorite television show is The Wire. And Omar from The Wire was just in my office on Friday. Like, we kicked it for 2 hours.
Wow.
And it's so cool, because now, like my college roommate and I, we watch every episode freshman year, and like I'm gonna get him a cameo for Christmas, and he has no idea that it's coming, and it's gonna blow his mind.
Oh, absolutely! You kidding me? He's gonna get that message and open it, and just mind blown. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. We're talking to Cameo CEO Steve Galanis and much more, and maybe we'll play a couple more cameos after this on 720 WGN. 951 720 WGN. We're talking to Cameo CEO Stephen Galanis all about the app and your website. And again, it lets you pay for personalized video shout outs from athletes, celebrities, social media influencers. Company's only a year old, but you are just, congratulations on all your success.
Or actually, 2 years old.
2 years now. 2 years now?
Fake news, but we're 2 years old. But it is crazy because, like, it's grown so much this year that, you know, last year I can hardly even remember, like, 2017 at this point.
So I can go online at cameo.com, cameo.com, and I can look up talent. There's featured, there's YouTubers, there's musicians, there's actors, reality TV, athletes, etc. Santa Claus, you can request. But I asked you if I could download this from my iPhone, and you have an interesting story about that, Stephen.
Yeah, so actually, Apple called our product a digital good, meaning they would take 30% off the top, which we think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we've actually elected to not sell Cameos in our iOS store, but for Android users out there, you can download the Cameo app and buy them right there. If you have an iPhone, just go to cameo.com on Safari.
And you can just do it that just through the web on the phone.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because otherwise we would have to jack the prices up by 30% on the consumers, and like we don't want to do that.
No, not at all. I'm obsessed now with finding someone that I want to have you, like Lance Bass, Rex Smith, Carson Kressley. Let's play, Michael. You have a couple athletes, right?
Yeah, I do.
Some video messages.
One of our own Chicago Blackhawks legend, Bobby Hull. You can get. Which is pretty exciting.
Oh, I love him.
Do you want to hear one from Keith?
Yeah.
To Keith.
Okay.
Hey, Keith. Bobby Hull, the Golden Jet, Chicago Blackhawks Hall of Famer here. I heard you played in the net, and how did you spend so much time in the box? As you are surrounded by hockey buddies, friends, and family, I want to add my happy birthday wishes to theirs. Happy 60th birthday, Bell, and many more.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, those are awesome. Those are cool. Like Bobby Hull was my dad's favorite player growing up.
Yeah.
And it's actually amazing. The tech that we build is so easy that even like Bobby Hull can make a cameo, right? He's 80 something years old.
Yeah.
And he's able to use this in the same way that a YouTuber is able to do it. So one of the things we wanted to do to make it ubiquitous was to make it so fun and so easy that the talent would do it for free, mm-hmm. but they get paid.
Oh, my God. And again, you go to the talent. If they're not on the list, I can request someone, and then that's up to you then.
If you search somebody that we didn't have, if you searched Mark Grace and we don't have Mark Grace.
Yeah, I said Mark Grace. That's
then you
why.
Can literally do two things. You can actually tweet at him and like tweet at Mark Grace to like try to get him to come on. But you can also put your email address in so when we get him, you get notified.
Is it unnerving? I mean, or do you kind of look at it as a challenge when someone submits a celebrity name to you? It's like, let's do this.
I mean, we get hundreds of like new requests every single day from people. Like at this point, we have over 60,000 people a day unique that come visit the website. So it is not a weird thing. Like it's great for our talent team because there's over 5 million people in the world we think could be on this. We have 6,000. So it's actually very helpful for us to know who people want.
If you had your dream celebrity who could give you, hey, Stephen Galanis, you did awesome. I'm so proud of you. Who would be your celebrity dream get for your own cameo?
I think Elon Musk right now would be really cool. I think that would be awesome. But
awesome.
The one that I talk about all the time is actually Eddie Belfour. I grew up, I played hockey my whole life.
Yeah.
I was a goalie, and Eddie Belfour was like my god growing up. So Eddie Belfour is a perfect example. Someone that's like, it's not that he's like inaccessible right now, but like he's not the number one person my sales team of like 22-year-olds is looking to get. But for me, if you really know me, if like one of the guys I grew up with my whole life, they know that getting Eddie Belfour for me would be more impactful than you know, even like Corey Crawford or like a current player.
I think we could do that. We know a lot of people who know the Blackhawks. I think that's absolutely doable. Michael, who would be your celebrity cameo get, your dream get?
Orion Samuelson.
Really?
I don't know.
That is so doable.
He'd be pretty doable.
I'm going to take half the cameo profit. I can get him for you.
You know what would be really awesome? Elon Musk is a great one.
I didn't even think about that one.
That one would be really good. I've really been into this guy named Gary Vaynerchuk. He's Gary V.
We know Gary V. We've been trying to get him for a while.
But he does so much online. I don't know, this is all his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. But that gets frustrating sometimes when like there's someone where you know it's like you will kill it on this thing.
Oh yeah,
and you will love it more. That's even more than the money. It's like they love doing it.
I want Diane Sawyer.
Oh,
that's gonna be mine.
One.
That'll be mine.
Well, have you ever thought about getting Jordan on? Have you reached out to him?
Yeah, you could get Jordan. Just go to a golf course or.
I mean, again, like, look, we would love to have Michael Jordan on. Like, if you ask, like, that's my number one probably of all time. You know, I'd love to have Michael Jordan do it. But, again, it comes down to how much we think that they would need to charge.
Yeah.
And then the liquidity of, like, could people afford it?
Right.
So that's why, like, I don't think we have perfect product market fit for the A-plus lister right now.
Yeah.
But I think, like, every single day we're getting bigger and bigger talent. And, like, we routinely sell $1,000 cameos every day.
See, that's awesome. That is, I'm so proud of you. It's Stephen Galanis. Where can people find you? Where can people find Cameo and get this going?
Yeah, you can find us at cameo.com. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. And we're going to get you Eddie Bell for.
I'd love
it. I promise. That's our guarantee. By the time you come
birthday,
visit us next
my birthday
year.
Is next Saturday. So
is it? All right. We got
December
a week.
15th.
We got a week. Thank you so much, Stephen. Best of luck and continued success. And we'll have news next on 720 WGN. 10:08 in the evening, 720 WGN. Thanks for being with us. We're going to talk a little bit about TIFs and why we should care and what a TIF is and what a back to the basics ordinance is, all going on in your city, and you need to know what is going on. 45th Ward Alderman John Arena joins us. How you doing, Alderman? Oh, there you I'm so sorry, Alderman. How are you? We always have phone issues this time of night.
No problem. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, first of all, I hear, a secret that's not so secret anymore. I know you're a huge Bears fan.
Yes.
And you were at the game yesterday.
Yeah. Me and my brothers have season tickets, and we got a chance to go down and tailgate for a little bit, enjoy the wonderful Chicago weather, and then enjoy a great game.
I hear you guys always do up a nice tailgate.
Yeah, we've been practicing at this for a number of years now.
Now, is this one of those steak and lobster tailgates, or is this brats and burgers?
Oh, no, it's burgers, and I make a mean popper, we call them, jalapeno stuff with good things and wrapped in bacon.
Ooh, that sounds really good. I have a friend who asked me to tailgate maybe like a year or so ago. I thought I was going to go for hamburgers and hot dogs. I'm not kidding you. They had shrimp cocktail. And they did like a surf and turf. They were grilling steaks out there. I think the tailgating is getting a little more high end at Soldier Field.
Yeah, well, we're in the South Services lot, so it's still pretty rough out there, but it's a lot of fun.
It is, boy. And you know what? What a game you saw! Holy cow!
Yeah, it was. It definitely was a great defensive effort. We know the offense is struggling with a couple of things, but. A lot of the pieces are there now, as we've seen over the last couple of years. We're in a place now where we're 9-4. We're looking at a playoff berth, and who knows after that.
I think they're going to take the Packers this time. I really do.
Yeah, I think we're in position to do it this year, and that's really exciting. So that's the next game we're gearing up for.
I hope so. Anything special at the Packers tailgate this weekend?
A lot of trash talking, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In terms of the menu, we haven't figured that out yet.
That'll be Friday, right? Friday, Saturday?
Figure it out over the weekend and then get ready for Sunday.
Well, the reason we wanted to have you on, first of all, we have to talk a little bit about TIFs, and people are going to go, oh, my God, what's a TIF? First of all, explain what a TIF is and why we have to care, why we should care.
TIFs have to do with how our property taxes are kind of controlled. So we pay our property taxes. Generally, if you look at your property tax bill, it divides it up. A percentage goes to schools and to parks, to the general corporate fund for the funds, the operations of the city, our libraries, things like that. And what changes when you're geographically in a TIF. A TIF is started, and in the first year of its creation, it sets kind of a bar, or it sets where the amount of money that's coming in that particular year. And then over the course of 23 years, it's assumed that property values will go up and income from your property taxes will steadily increase, and that's the increment. So from where you were in year one to where you are, later in the life of the TIF, there's an amount of money that's taken and set aside into a special fund. And that money can only be used for infrastructure projects, physical projects within the boundaries of a TIF that's defined at the beginning of the TIF. So if there's a school in your TIF, like in my case, we have Schurz High School is in the Portage Park TIF.
Mm-hmm.
So we are currently building, putting $3 million into a new sports field for that school. That's a real tangible improvement we can use that TIF money for. The other thing that TIFs can be used for is to incentivize development projects with the private sector in places where we wouldn't normally see that development happen in this moment in time. And this is where we can use these things well, and sometimes there's been examples where we haven't used them so well. And what we're doing recently, we were asking for some real clarification on when we use TIF for private development, to making sure some fundamental checks and balances are adhered to give our constituents more assurances that their TIF money, their taxpayer money, their tax funds are being used wisely and not being used to grant privileges to developers that they really don't need to incentivize a project.
Okay, so I was at the Finance Committee meeting today. We were all there basically for Alderman Burke. It was his first public appearance since the FBI federal agents raided mm-hmm. his offices. So stayed for the meeting, of course, and you were there was an ordinance being proposed called the Back to the Basics Ordinance.
Yeah.
Explain yep. what that is, and that's what you were trying to get passed today. Explain, first of all, what that does and what that is.
So what that does is literally get back to the basics of what TIFs were created to do by the state legislature. And in the state law that created the ability for us as a municipality to make a TIF, it says that we have to define and limit the creation of TIF to areas that are considered blighted. Now, that's a legal definition. It's not a kind of an emotional definition of what one person might consider versus another. It's a legal definition in the originating legislation. And we are asking in this ordinance to make sure that we go back to that basic definition. The definition of blight has been kind of been used as a more subjective term, in our opinion.
Uh-huh.
And so when people look at a TIF being created on downtown on LaSalle Street, there's many reasonable people would say that is not a blighted area.
Right.
That is an area that has opportunity for investment, that people will come in and renovate buildings and create businesses and locate their corporate headquarters downtown because it's downtown Chicago. Others might argue differently. Our position is that we want to define what blight is. We look at blight as places where there isn't the potential for investment, where nobody is going and hasn't gone for many, many years to invest and try to rebuild economies that have fallen, flat in our city. South side, west side, vacant lots, old warehousing areas, things that aren't getting investment and have been sitting derelict for years. Our ordinance basically sets that standard and then says there's a term called a but-for test, meaning will this project move forward but for the city investing some of this taxpayer dollars in the project itself? So we're just trying to set and clarify what the standards are, not only for taxpayers, but for the developers themselves. To say, look, here's where a project would rise to qualifying for TIF, and here's where a place where it wouldn't. And as we go forward from here, use those standards more transparently.
Okay, it sounds confusing, but if you listen very carefully, it makes a lot of sense. So you have to prove that the site blighted, as you mentioned, meaning vacant or obsolete. It has to pass the but-for test, because right now, TIF is notoriously used in financially stable or even thriving neighborhoods. And this is the big, this is the wow moment, which many of mm-hmm. us know, and is handed out to development companies that could adequately finance the projects in question through private funding. And I think it prevents favors, too.
Exactly. We want transparency. We want a clear standard that this administration or the any future administrations will all be held to. And we think the ordinance can achieve that. There's difference of opinion there from the administration, and that's why I think you saw some of the actions you saw today.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that, too. You tried to call it for a vote. It was, well, we'll tell you what happened, but it's something that everybody knows, especially, everyone should know, period, but especially in Chicago now with this Back to the Basics ordinance that you're trying to push through. And we'll tell you what happened today in council chambers. Can you hang on for a second, Alderman?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll be back after this on 720 WGN. 21 on 720 WGN. We're talking to 45th Ward Alderman John Arena about TIFs and trying to break it down and explain it, because it's really something that we all should know about when you hear your property tax bill and where TIF money is going. And a lot of people, you know, hundreds of millions of property tax dollars are allegedly being siphoned away from Chicago Public Schools, the Park District, and other city agencies in need of revenue. And we're trying to get a little basic crash course on it, too. And Alderman, talk about today when you were talking about the Back to the Basics ordinance. You were trying to get that passed today, and what happened?
Well, ultimately, we were getting into the discussion, talking about, how this could benefit people's understanding of TIF, and ultimately make sure that we're, like you said, directing these limited resources to incentivize projects that absolutely need the incentive. But if not, making sure those resources can be directed towards infrastructure, like I said, schools or parks or other things that we desperately need to keep up with as a city. What happened today was there was what's called a quorum call. Mm-hmm. Our councils, our rules say that in order to do action, we should have more than half of the members of a committee in the room at the time. Don't disagree with that. It's rare that we have a full quorum and in a body like the Finance Committee, which is 35 members, and a legislative tactic when things aren't going your way, as they weren't going this today for the administration, is to say, nope, we're taking our toys and we're going home. And they called quorum. We didn't have enough members, and so we couldn't take a vote on moving that forward. We also didn't take a vote on a number of other things that are important to deal with in the Finance Committee. So, we're looking at coming back in tomorrow and seeing where it goes. We've been in conversation with the administration over the course of the day about how we can find some common ground on this, and that's still in process right now.
Only 12 aldermen were present, 3 short of that quorum, and Alderman Burke, as we were discussing a little earlier, then recessed until tomorrow morning, as you just said, Alderman Arena. Do you have the votes necessary to pass this?
We would have passed it today with the count that we had. I think we have the votes to pass it. We've introduced this over 2 years ago. We've been working on this and talking to members. We brought it forward through a legislative process or threatened a legislative process to call it forward without a committee vote, a hearing. And in response to that, we were granted a committee hearing that we just talked about. This is a little bit in the weeds legislatively. This is complicated stuff, but it's not stuff that aldermen who have been working with these and have been talking to their constituents and have been, if you're awake in Chicago, you've heard something about TIFs, and it probably hasn't been good. There are good things that have been done with TIF in every ward, in every place where there's TIFs. What we're trying to do is make sure we're protecting constituents from the worst case scenarios where somebody's not keeping a close eye on this stuff. This ordinance, we think, would solve that. And I think most aldermen see that. And I think we would see a win in this if it were to come to the floor.
So there's a lot going on here, too, include TIF money that can be used for. There's four major or big projects that are going on downtown Lincoln Yard. No, I shouldn't say downtown, in the city. Lincoln Yards, mm-hmm. the 78. That's where Tribune Media wants to build the 15 office and residential. The 78 is the Roosevelt and Clark site.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yep.
Governor Rauner wants to build the U of I, Lincoln Yards, and of course Finkelsteel, which is
That's Lincoln Yards. Finkelsteel is
that is
Lincoln Yards.
Yards
is the
Burnham Lakefront. Burnham Lakefront. That's where Michael Reese is.
Ben Michael Reese, exactly.
Yeah, so there's four. So there's a lot of property, and there's a lot of development going on. I'm wondering if a lot of these projects might be possibly being stalled until there is a new mayor, and if that can even happen, because that's not going to happen for three more months.
Yeah. Well, the administration has been very clear they want to see those projects move forward before the end of Emanuel's term.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not necessarily against those moving forward one way or the other. What I want is basic transparency and making sure that, you know, in places like Lincoln Park, where you have, you know, an amazing amount of value to the land as it exists,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen is there's going to be a zoning increase allowed as in the proposal. That increase in zoning creates value. So if you could build under right now, say an 8-story building as it's zoned right now, but you're given zoning that would multiply that 10 times, that is a creation of value. And some people argue that, you know, by doing that, you're creating enough value that you can ask for developers to help the city out with creating more affordable units there by building public infrastructure that these projects need and the city needs, by providing open space through creating parkland. These are some of the things that have been discussed going forward, or as this has been moving forward, and those are valid things to be discussed about how much value are we giving the developer by upping the zoning, and what should we get in return for that value created. So there's some people that say, well, you build it, you put a TIF there, and you capture that revenue, and you build public infrastructure with it. That's what I think the administration is proposing now. My argument, and some others would say, you know what, there's enough value created that you don't need to create the TIF to do that. You can let the developer invest in some public infrastructure while it's getting an awful lot of private return on that investment. And then the increment that comes in that's free to be used anywhere in the city, since it's not contained in a TIF, can go to invest in neighborhoods that are struggling right now. Neighborhoods that have low unemployment, low business creation, infrastructure that's crumbling and we haven't invested in, and we constantly claim we don't have money for. Well, this is a way where you can take that value, property tax value, and apply it in neighborhoods where we need to get jump started. And so there's different mindsets on how we can create this, you know, this investment opportunity. And I think that's what we're struggling with right now and trying to work our way through.
Well, stay tuned. It's a lot to digest, and it'll be discussed again tomorrow morning. And if it doesn't go then, try again, right, Alderman?
That's the thing in legislature in like this. You really have to work on incremental change.
Yes.
Sometimes big jumps happen, but I think a lot of this stuff is incrementally moving the ball and knowing what your path is, what your goal is at the end.
Well, thank you for breaking down TIFs for us, and thank you for the 101.
My pleasure. Anytime.
We appreciate it. You take care. We'll talk very soon. Keep us posted.
All right, and go Bears.
There you go. Go Bears. Beat the pack.
Bye now.
Thank you, Alderman. That's 45th Ward Alderman John Areno. We'll have more after this on 720 WGN. You make me so happy. 1038, 720 WGN. Love the Bangles. Domati and Amy Guth were doing a show one night, and they were talking about the albums that shaped their lives. And Domati's like, oh, it wasn't Beyonce's Lemonade, but it was something, you know, very, very, very recent because he's very young. And congratulations to him for his new MTV Twitter gig.
Oh, man.
Domati Pongo rocking it.
Crushing the game right now, that man.
He is so awesome. And I told him that the Bangles' Different Light, which was the album that you just heard Walk Like an Egyptian off of in 1986, was the album that changed my life. It's when I really got into, like, rock and roll and music, and did I just completely date myself?
No, not at all. You need that kind of spark, and the Bengals
like
are so awesome.
Three back then, so I know, I loved it.
Were you born back then? Okay.
Yeah, right. Were you, I should say. Was Don? I don't know. You guys are youngsters.
No, not back then, but I did grow up listening to that album. My mom loved it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, it did, you know, affect me, even though those years were whatever, you know.
How old's your mom? I know I'm not supposed to ask.
She is 51, I believe.
Okay, good. She's young.
Yeah.
glad that was your mom's favorite album. I saw an interview with Susanna Hoffs, the lead singer of the Bangles, one time, and she said, yeah, it's so great. We're seeing, you know, kids come now, and then their moms and their grandmas, and she gave the, she said, and they're like in their 50s now, and I thought, okay, stop it. The grandmas are not in their 50s now. Maybe the moms are, but not, definitely not the grandmas. Hey, were you guys Friends fans? Did you ever watch Friends?
Oh, sure.
Okay. All the time, yeah.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you, are you like, do you watch an episode and you'll be like, you'll know, you'll have seen it, but you'll still watch it, like the remote dropper, as Nick DiGilio calls it?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's one of those comfort shows, I think you can call it. Like, if you're going to bed and you put on the Friends, you're going to fall asleep and know every single word, so you can kind of enjoy it without even listening to it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely. Did you know that Netflix has paid $100 million to keep Friends for one more year?
Wow. Just for 1 year?
For 1 year.
My God.
You wonder what those guys and Friends are up to, because it's always like, they should do a new, they should do a revamped show. They're getting paid still for a show that ended before the 2000s.
Right? Yeah. Do you remember, so for that show was on for 10 years, and then the 10th season, it was either the 9th or the 10th season, they all went in together and said, we all want to be paid $1 million an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And NBC said, done. But you want to talk solidarity.
Jeez.
So, yeah, the internet had a meltdown when it learned that Friends might be leaving Netflix on January 1st. That's when the contract went up. So Netflix revealed today that they would stay on the platform through 2019.
I have read so many articles this past year of people talking about how their Netflix subscriptions are basically paying for them watching over and over again one or two series. And Friends are at the top of lists for a lot of those people. Like, mm-hmm. people like to have a Netflix subscription just to watch shows like that.
That's true. That's what I do. I mean, mm-hmm. there'll be times where I will say, oh, do you remember the episode with Rachel turning 30 or whatever it is, mm-hmm. or the last episode or the Vegas episode.
Oh, yeah.
Just the other night I rewatched the one where they went to, I think it was like Puerto Vallarta, and remember Monica's hair? It's become the gif where her hair, you know, the humidity, and she's like, massive, it's the humidity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's got the big, and Chandler calls her Diana Ross.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Throughout the episode.
Classic episode. Every single episode. Even the one with Danny DeVito when he's the stripper who cries.
Yeah.
That one was really good. When Joey's on Password and he keeps saying ghost.
Yeah, that's
right.
A great one.
Right. Something that's in your fridge.
Yeah.
Bananas, butter, a ghost.
Right. Why would a ghost be
so
in your fridge?
Why would a ghost be in your fridge?
Yeah.
Or when they're doing rock, paper, scissor, and he does rock, paper, snow. And they're like, there's not a snow category. It's rock, paper, scissor.
Right.
I can quote that show all night long.
And all the Thanksgiving episodes that they have. I mean,
did you watch? They did, of course, Netflix did the top 10, because there were only 10 seasons, Thanksgiving episodes. And then I went back and I rewatched the football episode when they were competing for the Geller Trophy.
Yeah.
And Phoebe just would her only play is that she would lift her shirt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it would always drop the football.
Right, exactly.
That was awesome.
Well worth the $100 million,
yeah,
by the way.
Exactly.
Well worth.
Completely. All right, what would your favorite episodes be if you had to pick one?
For
just
Friends?
The first one that comes to mind, yeah.
Oh, definitely that Joey on Password. That's my go-to all the time.
I think, because
even when I'm sleeping and I'm like dozing off and that episode's on, I stay awake and just kind of giggle a little bit when he goes, a ghost.
Yeah. I know. I do that same thing.
That's a great one. I like the episode where they're playing the ball and they won't drop it. They're all competitive about it and they're tossing it to each other. I just like the conversations that they have. And
right.
Everybody's
they call in
freaking.
Sick.
Yeah, yeah,
to
exactly.
keep playing it. I do like one of my favorites, the Thanksgiving episode where with the plates, and she didn't want them to use the china from the wedding.
Yeah. Yes.
And at the end, Chandler breaks all the plates. But Monica goes, don't take it out on the plates, because they're getting mad at each other and they're cutting the food really hard and the knife is scraping against the plate.
Right.
And Phoebe holds up the chicken leg or the turkey leg. And Monica says, I'm fun. And Phoebe went, oh, yeah, you're all about the fun. And she's cutting her food up in the air so it won't touch the plate.
Right, yeah, just so demanding.
Mm-hmm. And that's at the end. Oh, God, I love it. Yeah, but $100 million just to stream it in 2019. Before that, Netflix was paying $30 million to stream the show.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, just as you look forward, like next year, you know, Disney's streaming service is coming out and Netflix is losing a lot of titles because of that. And you just think, I do anyway, that shows like Friends, like Frasier, like the long series of comfort shows, The Office, things that people turn to Netflix to watch over and over again.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try their best to hang on to those, even if they are paying a lot, because mm-hmm. that's what they've got mm-hmm. that other streaming services don't.
Yeah, they're all thinking ahead, obviously, into this streaming game, because this is obviously where TV is going. Who'd have thought that TV would be a thing of the past so early? I mean, it only mm-hmm. came out in like the 50s.
Do you know, I know crazy. People who don't yeah. have cable anymore. They actually just have, they pay for internet mm-hmm. to, and just have Netflix.
Andrea, I haven't had cable in like 6 or 7 years.
Are you
years.
Serious?
I'm dead
so
serious.
So you do Netflix? Do you do like Hulu or?
I don't have Hulu. I have Netflix, and then my mom has cable, and what I do is I use apps and I cheat and I log into her.
Okay.
I use her information so that I can watch like sports through the Fox app or like, you know, CBS or whatever, if anyone's airing a football game or
right.
NBC with hockey and stuff. So I just kind of use Netflix and, you know, my own movie collection, and then for sports I just go through the whatever carrier's apps, and that's been fine for me. Sports are like the only thing I miss from live TV.
And what do you, can I ask, what around do you pay then for? So you pay your Netflix, which is what, $10 a month?
Yeah, it's 12, because like I've got four sisters and my mom, and they all use,
and you all can yeah. watch at different and times.
I would get booted.
That is nice of you.
Well, there was a time when I was getting booted from Netflix because too many people were watching it.
Right,
at
that's
once.
What I have. I just have the one.
Yeah, so I eventually upgraded, and I really haven't gone back. So, but even so, that's like maybe $12.99, I think.
Right, and I'm paying $100 for Comcast. Michael, do you have cable? And it's not just Comcast. Mm-hmm. I used to have AT&T, and I switched to Comcast.
Oh, so we, same thing. I yeah. live in a high-rise, so we all need to pay into our assessment fees
yes.
for this RCN thing. And I'm like, I barely even watch TV. I'm one of those guys who, much like the people that were reading about in this article,
yeah.
I put on Friends or The Office, and I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe a movie every once in a while,
me too.
But that's kind of it.
I do the same thing. There's a couple of things. I watch Empire, Grey's Anatomy, you know, so I'll tape things off cable, which I could get on Hulu.
Yeah, Hulu, that's something. I mean, you know, my mom and a few aunts have been complaining about cable for the last like a year or two, because they also have AT&T.
Yeah, because it's like $100 for your basic package and you get
and they
10
don't,
channels.
Yeah, and they don't watch a lot of those things either. They've got their shows that they pick, but like for the most part, I mean, it's just obvious to so many people now that like there's a better way of doing it. And Hulu, the reason I thought of it is because Hulu's what I've been recommending to all of them, because that's
yeah.
got a live TV package and a DVR
right.
and sports.
And, yeah, you can watch the Conners. I mean, there's certain shows that they do have that you can watch, your regular shows.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, something with like that, with the option of live TV and a DVR thing so you can still record them. I mean, that's for $40 a month, I want to say.
See,
so.
and think about it. I mean, I truly, Don, I didn't know you had that, and I know more and more people are doing it, and I think that might end up being the way of the landline.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Because
yeah.
no, I don't know anyone who has a landline anymore, except
well,
my mom.
Yeah, right, right.
My
yeah.
aunts.
mine too. It is, but it's just like, once there's a better mousetrap out there, once there's a better way of doing things and it starts to catch on, like, after a while, you're thinking at night, like, why am I paying $200 for something that I really do not use and never have used all of it.
Did you guys ever have, not when you live with your parents, but, and I'm only asking because I am just curious because I'm a little older than you. Did each of you have landlines when you eventually moved out of your home, your parents' house?
Absolutely, yeah. I
you
mean,
did, okay.
When I moved out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's just turn you off right there. Michael, when you moved out, did you have a landline?
We had it for about a month when we were in our, when I was going to DePaul, because we wanted to be adults. It was me, my roommate Mark, and we thought, well, this is the one way we can be adults. It was right before cell phones exploded and the smartphone
yeah.
came out.
Yeah.
And we had the landline, and the only people who would ever call us, though, were telemarketers.
Oh, my God.
So we lost it immediately.
Boy, I remember. So I had obviously a landline growing up, then in college, and then my first and second apartments, because I remember I graduated. And my college roommate and her best friend from home got in this big argument, and we did the conference call on the landline. And I was like, you guys, don't fight. You're good friends. They ended up making up. But I just remember having that conversation on the landline. And then I got rid of it shortly thereafter, and I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to just live with the cell phone?
Right.
And now now it's, you know,
it's ubiquitous. Yeah.
Landlines are pretty obsolete.
The only thing that I do miss is when you're really angry, slamming that phone down and seeing the wires and like
come to work
shaking.
And do that.
Okay,
we still have these phones.
Yeah, that's doable.
We can do that here.
Or I have a burner cell phone, a flip phone that I use for that purpose. Sometimes I'll just make a call on that and I'll close it,
snap it really quickly.
Who do you think Kleppen's got a burner phone? What are you doing?
Well, no, I've lost
arranging hits.
I've lost my smartphone several times, a shameful amount of times.
So you got a burner.
So I have that there that I can take and get, like, you know, activated to wait the 2 weeks or whatever until my replacement, you know, phone arrives.
Kleppen's all Hollywood. That's what he is.
You are. Seriously, you got the Hulu, the Netflix, the
bye.
His burner.
I've just got some stuff working, you know.
I keep it. I never use it. It's just like in a shoebox. Mm-hmm. My Razor. Do you remember the Razor?
Yeah.
It was a flip phone.
Is it a pink one?
It was red.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the U2 red.
I remember those pink ones came out, those were the thing, man.
Oh,
I saw
pink
those
razors?
Everywhere. Yeah, and I saw those everywhere.
I still have a Palm Pilot, too, in that shoebox.
Cool.
I'm keeping all my old electronics because someday I think they'll be worth something.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or like you put it in a museum somewhere.
Yeah,
like,
right. I'll call Bruce Dumont and Dave Plyer. I'll put it
in the
Museum of Broadcast Communications.
He'll be like, I didn't mean this when you said, send me your stuff. I didn't mean this.
Be like, wow, Andrea Darlis's Razor phone, great.
You know, my mom
keep it in the shoebox in the closet.
Right.
No.
My mom had her pink Razor up until like maybe 2 years ago, by the way. So they were really, really durable if you just needed a phone call and if you wanted to play the game Snake on your phone.
Snake.
Yeah, man.
Or Tetris.
Those old cell phone games, man.
Old
those
Tetris.
Those were fun.
I have not seen Nick DiGilio's cell phone in a while, but the last time he showed me, probably a year ago, and he had an old-fashioned cell phone.
Mm.
I don't know if it was the flip or if it was
the old Nokia.
The Nokias, yeah, that slid.
Oh, yeah.
I think he gets text. I know he gets text because we'll text sometimes.
Yeah. I remember the tiny, just like, it wasn't a flip and it didn't slide. It was just like a brick, like a little, there were Nokias and Siemens, I think, was the one that I had. And it was it was just the buttons were right out there, but you could, I whipped that thing at walls regularly and it still works.
That's a good idea. We got to get some of those, Michael.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to whip up my old bag phone.
Make sure you, when you do that, when you whip any phones, they're the phones that you had years ago
and
in
not
the shoebox.
Your current one.
I know.
Yeah, that is one. My fear. Okay, we'll talk cell phone fears after this. 720 WGN. Talking about Friends, because Netflix has just paid $100 million to keep the reruns going for another year, which delights me, Michael, and Don, I believe. We're talking real quick before we have to head off to the news. And about cell phones, and I said my biggest fear is dropping the cell phone in the toilet. Not that I bring the phone in with me, you know, while I'm in the facilities, but you know, I mean, I use it as my alarm. I use it as a light at 4 o'clock in the morning when I wake up. You know, so I mean, and when I go to bed.
Wait, you don't bring your phone in when you're in the washroom?
I usually don't.
That's where I get like 90% of my emails
done.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See, I'm always doing through emails throughout the day and stuff, too.
Scrolling.
But
tweeting.
Yeah.
That's it.
And you're tweeting.
That's what it is.
This is the image. So now I know where you guys are when you're tweeting and you're Facebooking, you're Instagramming.
I mean, maybe 10%.
And posting our podcast.
Well, I can't post the podcast from there. So all your listeners, just make sure. Yeah, don't worry. They're all posted here because I think that'd be a little bit hard to edit audio while I'm doing that.
But I keep it in my back pocket a lot. You know, if I have jeans on, I'll keep it in my back pocket. And I'm like, oh, shoot. You know, so that's my fear. Or dropping it in a sink if I set it down. Because I cracked the back part of my screen.
Oh, man.
Can you believe that? And you know what? Apple doesn't replace the back part.
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy? You have to buy a whole new phone. You can drop it and crush the front screen, and they can replace that and the LED lights and everything. But if you drop the back and it breaks right around this little camera area, you're out of luck.
Oh, man. I did not know that.
So don't do that. Get the case immediately. And the sad part is, I had it on my bed and I was putting the new case on it. It was 2 days old, the phone.
Oh, no.
And it snapped out of the case and fell on the hardwood floor.
That is the worst.
I know.
Yeah, you know, I broke mine too. Yeah, well, I think I'm part of the broken broken phone club.
Oh.
Well, mine is my front.
Okay, will you
screen.
Fix it?
I always thought to myself, you know, I saw the people who had it all broken up. And I'm like, how could you not fix it? But, you know, to be honest, It doesn't really make that much of a difference. I keep it broken.
See, I have to. I know most people do keep it broken. Mm-hmm. I would have to fix it.
It drives me crazy, though, every time I try to swipe or something like
that. I know. Yeah. All right, we'll be back with Don's news after this on 720 WGN.